The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Good evening, Ian.
All right, mate, how you doing?
Very well, thank you. Ian, what have you got for us on this holiest of nights?
Well, first time caller, long time listener and all that.
Well done. That's the password to get on. You're now into the secret club.
Cheers.
Good work.
Just a quick one, really. Just that's off to you for beating the demons with regards to the drugs in the past.
Oh, yeah.
I was in a similar position myself quite a few years ago.
Damn drugs, huh?
Mate, I tell you what, though, how good does it feel not having to chase...
To be high on drugs. How good does it feel, what did you say? To be high on drugs. What?
To not have to chase that buzz anymore.
It's nice freedom. It's freedom. It's freedom. That's the thing. It's freedom from active addiction. It's, here's the thing about being a junkie, right? It's really boring. It's really, really boring. Everyone thinks, being a junkie, it's not... Being a junkie is you spending all of your time, even when you've just scored. After you've taken your first line, right, even if you've got like 10 grams of coke and you've just done your first line, you think, right, what am I going to do when I run out of this? How are we going to get... So your whole thinking is, how am I going to get more? And most of your time is spent waiting in a car for the man, to turn up. And the man says, I'll be there at 12, so you get there at 10:30, just in case you can make it early. And then, of course, the man don't get there till 3, 4, or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And then you get home, you got all this gear, you go, brilliant, you do the first line, and go, oh, man, but this is going to run out soon. Oh, man! That's it. That's what being a junkie is. That's what it is. There's some funny bits. There's some giggles in there, let's be honest. There's a few chuckles, but that's what it mainly is.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, the negatives far outweigh the positives, as you know.
Totally, man.
But I mean, it was heroin I was addicted to. Spent nearly 10 years on that garbage. I've been clean since 2001 now.
Congratulations. And there'll be people listening going, well, how the hell do you do it? How do you do it?
Well, it all came to a head where it was at the point where I was either going to be dead or in jail. Luckily for me, I ended up going to jail for quite a long period. It gave me the opportunity while I was in there to seek support and advice and rehab and make serious changes to my life before I was released, you know. And that's what I did, and I've never looked back since.
And did you just get clean, just getting clean? Did you go to meetings? Did you see a therapist? What happened?
On that occasion, I mean, I've tried it several times before that, but on that last occasion, once you go to prison, they basically put you behind a door for a few days, and that's it. You know, you do your cold turkey, as they call it.
Good for you, man.
But because of the length of time I was in there, it gave me a chance psychologically to get my head around being off it and look at other things to do other than wanting to just take drugs, you know.
There you go.
And life is damn good, let me tell you.
Well, then that, mate, is all I want to hear. That's all I want to know. I'm thrilled for you. I couldn't be happier. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's the same for you too.
Thank you.
Because you beat your demons too.
Well. Hey, listen. One day when there's a little bit more water under the bridge, I will more than happily come on this show and tell you about when it got a little bit wobbly quite recently. But right now it's a little bit too close. It's a little bit too close to the edge to reveal that. The newspapers. You just have to wait. You just have to wait for my more recent adventures, my more recent experiments.
Let them wait.
Screw those guys. But it's good, man. It's the way it should be. Should be clean and serene, and I'm productive, and I'm making stuff. And here's the thing: I don't lie to my friends anymore. Imagine I'm not lying to people who love you. Wow!
No, absolutely, you've got respect back.
Yeah. Hey, nice one, Ian. Good. Well, congratulations. Get another day under your belt.
Cheers, matey.
Tutty bye. 0344 499 1000. Good evening, Paul.
Ian, how you doing, man?
I've just seen that Divine Comedy have released a new live album, so I've just ordered it. I'll tape it.
Oh, good stuff. I like the Divine Comedy.
I love the Divine Comedy. We're going to kick off the next day. It's got music's got a little bit controversial in the first couple of hours, so the last hour we're going to kick off with a Divine Comedy classic.
He knows I like the Divine Comedy.
Is it going to be Songs of Love?
No. We're going to dig deeper in the back catalogue than that. Around the same era. No, a little bit earlier than that. A little bit earlier than that, we're going to go, I think. From one of the first two or three albums, the classics, the classic albums. I'm going to go.
Awesome.
Classic album
Ian,
cuts.
Thank you for recommending the Loudon Wainwright III documentary.
Oh, that was to you, yes.
Performance.
Did you enjoy it?
So good. It is so good. I've watched it twice now, and it is brilliant.
He's a for those who don't know, go on Netflix. Surviving Twin is Loudon Wainwright. It's sort of theatre. It's not in concert. It's like a performance. It's about 90 minutes. It's him singing songs and telling stories and reciting some of his days. Dad was a writer for Life magazine, I think it was, and reciting some of his things. And what's great is he recites these huge, long, sprawling articles. Doesn't read them. That's what impressed me. I thought, that's really old-fashioned. That's the kind of thing that people would have done 20, 30 years ago in a show. Now, people would get up with a book and go, I would like to read from my father's thing, and then read it. He's learned it. He's old school. And he performs them brilliant. The suit story. I mean, come on,
so
man.
Funny.
And he puts the suit on. It's just brilliant.
It's when he drops his trousers on the middle of the stage.
He does drop his trousers. He's an old ham. He's an old ham.
It's so funny. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's good. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, I loved it, man. I loved it. Thank you very much. I was wondering if you had time to watch the Austin the Boston
No. I've not watched any telly. I've not watched any telly apart from the R. Kelly thing, because I've not had access to my living room until today because I've got a decorator in. So I've been reading, and I've been reading a lot. And I've been doing things. So, no, I haven't watched it. And I may not watch it. Here's the thing, Paul. Here's the thing about me. I may not watch it for another 5 years. But it's lodged in my brain. It's going to get watched at some point, and then I'm going to go, oh, this is brilliant. I noticed the Staves didn't reply to your... Was it you that tweeted them about coming on the show?
I know. Let's tweet them again tonight. What are they doing?
Let's just take the hint. Let's not hassle them anymore. They obviously don't want to. I don't want to put them on the spot. That's fine. I think it's a terrible mistake for them not to come on the show. I think we could really, really shift several thousand copies of their albums. But that's not what they want. That is fine. I respect them for that. Peace and love to the Staves. So there we go. That's the end of that. That's how that goes. Anything else, Paul?
That's all, buddy.
Tutty bye, tutty bye. Thanking you. Thank you very much. 0344-499-1000 is the telephone number. Here's an advert for one of my colleagues.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
0344-499-1000. Let's go to Navid. Good evening, Navid.
Hi. How are you?
I'm tired. I hate the callers. I hate the listeners. but apart from that, I'm having the time of my life, brother. How you doing, man?
I'm okay. I was wondering if you could help me today.
Of course I can help you today. I'm the greatest help there is. I'm the biggest helper in the world. You know that.
I want you to find someone for me to date.
Not a problem at all. What are you looking for? A lady?
Yes.
How tall?
I'm 6'1".
Okay, so what do you want? Do you want shorter than you, I'm guessing? What, 5'8"? 5'8"'s a nice height. 5'9"?
5'5" would be nice.
Ooh, he likes them short. Likes the ladies short.
That's not short. I'm 5'6".
She likes the ladies tiny. okay. Any particular... Please don't jump down my throat, guys. Let's be real. We're having a realistic, honest conversation. Is there any particular ethnicity you'd like?
No.
Well, that's fine, okay. You just go ask these questions.
Look, should we go a bit deeper? What kind of personality are you after?
No, hang on a minute. You've got a couple more questions. What size boobs?
Oh, I knew you were going
I'm there. Joking. Go on, Catherine. You do your touchy-feely stuff.
Well, what kind of personality are you after, Navid?
Someone that's nice, honest and trustworthy.
He wants a nice person.
Totally blind.
Sorry, what the heck? What did you say?
I said I'm totally blind, so I can't see that person.
Okay, so basically mingers are allowed to apply as well, then. You won't know.
He wants a beautiful soul. That's what he wants.
Ah, souls. so how old are you, Navid? Tell us, we're joking to one side, because we're having a laugh, because that's what we do here with the Late Night Alternative. We take a sideways glance at the news and people's problems and issues, and we poke fun at them. So tell me a little bit about yourself, man. What's going on in your life?
I'm 37 years old. I'm 6'1". I weigh 107 kg, which is about 17 stones.
Gee.
So I've got broad shoulders, big back, and I've got 43-inch calf muscles.
He is a whole lot of man.
This guy's a beautiful guy. He's the most beautiful guy I've ever seen in my life. I love this guy.
What's the hair situation?
Short hair.
Short hair.
So why is it? What's good? But you say you're right. So why are you not? Where are you in your life? Why are you phoning a radio station to help you? You sound like a nice guy. You sound like a catch. You sound like the kind of guy, seriously, that anyone would be proud to be seen walking down the road with. So it's just not happening for you.
And there's a stigma in the Asian community when you're disabled because they don't see you as a person. They see you as a burden. So someone that's going to go out with me will not be seeing me as a normal guy. They'll see me someone that needs support and will just be a burden because I can't protect them or I can't see them. So basically, when they walk, I walk. And when they stop, I stop.
You say in the Asian community, can we narrow that down a bit? What's I'm going to say Pakistani?
Yeah, I'm Scottish Muslim.
Scottish Muslim. Pakistani heritage?
Yes, okay.
Whereabouts in Pakistan your family from?
Faisalabad.
Okay, I don't know Faisalabad. The only place I know really is Karachi and Lahore. That's it. So unless someone says Karachi, I'll be, I don't know. Gosh, that's, well, listen, I don't think it's exclusively an Asian thing to see a disability, in inverted commas, as a burden. I think that there are certain aspects of all communities where some people would think that.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's always seen as a burden, but it's certainly a complication, isn't it?
But I do think there are some people that... Sorry, I do think there are some people that would see it as a burden.
Yeah,
of course there are. But go on, what are you going to say?
I was going to say it's harder in the Asian community compared to the non-Asian community because it's just a stigma. I didn't want to talk about it.
Okay, well that's a shame, man. I'm sorry to hear that. That must be tough.
Can I say that I'm from Huddersfield, West Yorkshire at the moment? That's where I live.
Big up the Huddersfield, West Yorkshire, massive. That's what we're doing. Here's the thing. Realistically, you don't want to date any of our listeners. They're all weirdos, man.
You never know. I might find the one that might love me for me and not for my disability.
Yeah, or you might get Nigel from Maidstone. So you've got to be careful. Got to be really careful. But here's the thing. I don't think... I'm always very reluctant to do a hey, can we find a date for this guy? Because if it goes tits up, I would feel terribly guilty. But there must be something we can do to nudge you in the right direction. If anyone is listening, right? I know we have blind listeners. I know we have a lot of blind listeners actually, because I go round to their houses and I tune their radios into talk radio and then I hide the radio and leave it on the whole time. So I know we've got a lot of blind listeners. If any of you have, I don't know where one would go if you were a blind person wanting to date. I wonder if there's an app. Like blind date. I'm going to start an app called Blind Date for blind people. Catherine's making ooh 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 noises.
I just seen something on the RNIB's website. This person is thinking about setting up a website for online dating for the visually impaired.
Okay.
Let's see. Yeah. Not sure. La-la-la. What's the answer?
He's thinking about it. That's great. That's wonderful. He or she is thinking about it. That's great. That's wonderful.
Looking at the responses to see if anyone's made any suggestions.
I was going to say that if anybody is interested, they can talk to you guys as you've got my number. Then you can forward my number to them.
Here's the thing. We could do that, Naveed. I'm going to say no. Because, supposing we get a dodgepot and we give them your number and then they phone up and then they murder you. So here's the thing, Naveed. Supposing a woman phones up, right? This is a real thing that could happen. A woman phones up, says, I'm interested in Naveed. So we give her your number. She phones you up. She sounds nice to you. You invite her round. She comes round and she rips off all her clothes and you have wild, mad, passionate sex, right? Now, I don't want that happening for you, okay? I want to protect you from that, okay, Naveed? So my job is to protect you from sex. So I'm going to say no to giving out your number because I just think it's a little bit of a risk.
Okay.
But do you listen regularly? Have we spoken before?
Yes, we have, yeah.
I thought we had. When did we speak?
I remember.
Oh, we spoke last week!
You lost your sight on your birthday.
No! So sorry, mate. I've just worked out exactly who you are. We spoke last week. Except we were on speakerphone last week, I remember. What was that about, man? What was the speakerphone thing about? I didn't want to mention it in case you couldn't hold a phone, but obviously you can.
No, that was using Google Mini.
Okay, all right. Yeah, you had bad luck. Diabetes, wasn't it? And you went blind on your birthday.
Yeah.
Oh, man alive. All right, well, keep listening. My listeners are weird, but they're also cool. We've got some cool people listening who might know a little bit more about how to do this and how to do it properly, right? Because I don't want to put you in a dangerous situation. I want to put you in a fulfilling, loving, romantic, lifelong, exciting situation. And we want to find someone. It would be good if you could find someone who doesn't consider you a burden, considers you a human being, considers you an equal partner, considers you to be something special.
Yes.
I don't know. Are there any apps for blind people?
I'm just looking now.
Have you found any, Naveed?
I haven't found any, but there's one called Blind Square, which is a GPS app.
Oh, okay. Listen, we'll put it out there. The phones aren't lighting up at the moment with people with suggestions. But let me have a little. Sorry, did you sneeze? Are you crying? Are you laughing?
No, I'm just laughing.
Stop laughing! This is not a place for fun, Naveed! Stop! Stop laughing, Naveed! Stop it!
Did I tell you that I've got a dimple on my right cheek as well?
Oh.
On your face?
Yeah.
Okay. Did I tell you that I can go Ecto T Chapanche Sadat Nodas? Yes, mate!
What's that?
None of your business. It's private between me and Naveed.
Are you alright, Naveed?
Yeah.
Is it okay that he said that, or are you going to sue him?
No, it's okay.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Well, do I need to do another ad before? So we're going to do have a chat, Steve, then we'll do some ads, and we're all groovy, we're all cool. Thank you very much indeed. Let's go to Steve. Good evening, Steve.
Evening, Ian, evening, Cass.
Sorry to keep you waiting so long, Steve. That's my fault. I'm a terrible human being. I'm a scumbag. We're going to have a great conversation. We're going to have a great chat. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
It's chat time.
Just listening to you tonight, buddy, and heard you say about the child abuse and talking about your little wobble and what have you. And we spoke before. I don't know whether you remember about child abuse.
Yes, I think I do.
Yeah, I'm the guy who went and gave evidence and the nonce got 28 years.
Oh, I do remember that, yes.
It was about this time last year, maybe a little bit later last year.
Yeah.
Just heard you tonight and just wanted to say stay strong, buddy.
I've
been clean now since 19th of March 2003.
Yes, man! Coming up to the big 16th anniversary!
It is, buddy. Just not too long ago had the 5,000-day anniversary.
Wow. And how are you doing it? You doing it in rooms? Are you doing it on your own?
Basically, I was told I needed to stop, otherwise I'd kill myself.
Yeah.
So that's a big wake-up call.
Yeah.
So went and got help via AA. Did the meetings for a while. I must admit, since moving, I've not been to a meeting.
Yeah.
Now I keep what I call a reality check kit.
Yeah, go on.
And that's a small bottle of vodka and a picture of my daughter.
Oh, what? Hang on a minute.
And if I've...
Go on, how does that work?
It's a small bottle of vodka, which is unopened, and a picture of my daughter.
Yeah.
And every time I feel like I need a drink or feel a wobbler, I take both of them out, put them on the table, and guess which one wins.
So far, is that not... is that not a little bit... Because here's the thing. Let's just say I had a little wobble. And I've been carrying around for a long time, and I stopped doing the meetings. I've been carrying a button around for a long time. I've been carrying around the effort button. And I just put the effort button in front of me, and I slammed it down hard. I went, F this. And, you know, a picture of my kids wouldn't have been enough to have stopped that. Do you not worry that having that bottle of vodka there is a little...
It's been there so long now, mate, that it doesn't bother me.
Okay, good. Okay. Okay.
There are times when I feel like, it's been a real shit week. Sorry.
That's all right.
I didn't swear.
I don't apologise for having a shit week.
Real bad week, yeah. And life's building up and not sleeping, despite taking more mirtazapan than you were taking.
Yeah.
And basically, just... think, I could do with a drink, and basically, no, picture of my daughter keeps good. Me straight.
That's working for you, man. That's working for you, then that's working for you, and that's all we need. And good work, Steve. Well done. Congratulations, and I look forward to you giving us a call on your 16th birthday, and we will salute you. Literally, we will salute you.
Cheers, Ben. And in answer to your question at the start of the show, yes, but not together.
Thank you very much indeed, Steve. There we go. He's a good man. He's answering our phone in, weren't he? I know we get calls on it. I kept him waiting for ages. I really, really apologise, Steve. Sorry, it's just the way it worked out. Let's do this, then we'll have the break, and then we'll do the bit of da da ba ba ba. Paul, good evening, Paul.
Hello! How are you?
Hello, Paul Innocent. I've been practising my Paul Innocent impression.
Oh, my, everybody else does the same, as you, whenever I talk.
I've been practising my Paul Innocent impression, and I sound a little bit like James Mason on cocaine. I'm a James Mason on cocaine, and I sound a lot like Paul Innocent. I'm not suggesting you're on cocaine, but that's just the way my voice goes.
It's a little bit Cary Grant as well.
There's a bit of Cary Grant. Cary Grant was a big fan of LSD.
LSD, yeah.
Oh, he loved the LSD. You wanted to, anyway.
Really? I had no idea he was on that stuff. Really, I had no idea.
He was put on it by a psychiatrist.
There was a psychiatrist who would dish out LSD. Frankie Howard as well did LSD under the supervision of a psychiatrist.
I heard things about Frankie, unfortunately, yeah. I've heard things about him, but not Cary, no.
But James Mason on cocaine sounds like the actor Paul Innocent. Paul, by the way, for the new listeners, Paul Innocent is the official acting coach of this radio station. Paul,
you've seen some of my videos, have you? Have you? What's going on here?
All I've seen are some of your videos on you being an actor on your YouTube channel.
That's what it's about.
I'm sounding a bit like David Bowie. I'm David Bowie, and I invented Paul Innocent as my follow-up character to Ziggy Stardust.
So what about Ray Winston? We'll put his voice on.
Shut your face. Who's the daddy?
Who's the posse daddy?
Shut your face. You look innocent. You ain't so innocent. You certainly won't be when I finish with you, boy.
Call him a melt.
He's made a feature film called White Glove Massive.
Racist? Oh, you made a film about racist gloves?
No, on the contrary, it takes us back to the 80s rave scene, and I play a character named Gappy in it. It's available on Amazon.co.uk, and I wanted to call up.
Hang on a minute, you play a character called what, Gappy?
Gappy.
No, Gappy, G-A-P-P-Y, as in Gary, Apple, double P,
What's the movie called? White Glove Massive. Right, hang on.
White Glove Massive, yeah. Yeah, it's about the 80s rave scene. It's a wonderful movie, and I wanted to ring up and hype it on your show.
It's £10.
I'm
not spending
£10
on it.
Well, you'll find a way of doing it. Anyway, you know it's out there. All right.
White Glove Massive, beside Brandon King, Al Wood, Sean Elio, Thomas Williamson, and Lee Mossy. A Trip Down Memory Lane. It's an 80s...
That's right.
Are you the guy wearing pink glasses?
No. On the contrary, I play a counsellor who was a drug addict in the past. He's now reformed and he's helping other people out. But I don't come into about the 47th, 48th minute. And I'm in
That's someone who sat there with a stopwatch.
Yeah, bless him.
Well done. And when did you film this then?
We filmed this about a year and a half ago, and it was fun to do. Very little money, but such fun to do. It was an amazing sort of trip down memory lane, as it says.
Here we go. Listen to this, right? 5-star reviews. 100% 5-star reviews. That's not bad going.
Look at that, you see.
That is not bad.
All the reviews read like this?
Great film, so true to life, says Tina. Mark says, great film, good to see some homegrown... Michael says, I think the movie was very funny in parts. Stephen says, enjoyed watching the film. Can't beat the old school vibe. Rip Harsh says, Al Wood, a.k.a. Smiley, makes the film. Carol Gray says, enjoyed it. Can't wait to see the next installment. Janet says, loved it. Donna says, this film is crap. I'm joking. She says it was a good film.
Who's Poxy Donna? I want a word in her shell line.
I want a word in Donna's shell line.
Well, that's not, they're not too bad.
They're all five-star reviews.
Well, this is the thing, and I thought, that was a bit of a hype on Ian's show. I thought, let's just get on there and put it forward, I think.
Put it forward. It's always good. Listen, put your best work and your best foot forward is all I can say. Put your worst work and your worst foot backward. But the rest of it goes foot first forward, as far as I'm concerned, Paul.
Well, that's how I've always seen it myself.
Yep.
Some people don't tend to work that way.
Well, some people make me want to puke.
Oh, and me. And I'm glad you're a man after my own heart. You have to keep a lot of it bottled up in the society.
I'm going to... Hang on a minute. I'm going to IMDb. Let's see what IMDb says. White Glove Massive. 8.5 on IMDb.
High praise indeed. What about Rotten Tomatoes?
Let's have a little look at the old Rotten Tomatoes. El Tomatoes, El Caputes.
No.
Yes, White Glove.
Tomates.
Yes.
Podridas.
Okay.
Fantastico. So which one is? It's going to be good, okay.
It's not on there.
Isn't it?
It
may be too soon. It only came out in December. It was released on DVD, maybe. I don't know how Rotten Tomatoes works, but it may be too soon.
Yeah. There we go, Paul Innocent as Gappy. There we go. Yeah. It's,
yeah.
Well done. Congratulations to you. Congratulations to the crew that made it. Well done to Kenneth King, who's the producer, and also Devin King and Alan Woods. They sound like a great, great team.
They're wonderful people.
Well
amazing
done
people.
To Charlotte Tipple, who's the script supervisor, Michael Cutbush, who's the location manager, Mrs. Wood, she is the caterer.
Yeah.
If you're wondering where the police uniforms are supplied from, it's Chris Martin Hill and Lee Nicholas Harris. Well done to John Wallage, the first assistant director of the second unit.
Who was the best boy?
That is not listed here, unfortunately. But they probably didn't have a best boy, actually. Smaller crews, you won't necessarily get a best boy. I'm afraid they don't always.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Dear listener, good evening. This is, get them while they're hot, because there ain't many of these shows this week. I'm Ian Lee. Who are you?
Catherine Boyle.
This is the Late Night Alternative. Shut up now, Michael McGee. And we're not here tomorrow, because tomorrow, of course, is the big old... is Brexit.
Yeah, we don't do Brexit.
We do not do... But the reason we don't do it is because...
they've cancelled Brexit.
That's why. But so they're getting grown-ups in to do grown-up show, and I've heard the lineup, and let's just say it sounds great. Those crazy guys.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. 0344 499 1000 is the telephone number. We're joined by Sarah Barron. Good evening.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
It's a very absolute pleasure. Big chunky cardigan.
I love that cardigan.
I've got a big
thank
chunky
you.
Cardigan.
It really spoke to me when I saw it. Why did you... It's very warm in here.
Yeah, that's why I took mine off.
But I'm in what you call a vest. I call a tank top. And it's not meant for... It's not meant to be worn on its own, so I'm going to sweat through the cardigan in your warm studio.
I hope this isn't in any way inappropriate, and we'll talk about inappropriate... No, give it.
I want it. I think it's going to make me feel good, whatever it is.
I can see the strap of what you're calling a tank top.
Yeah.
Now, that's interesting. It's thin. It's maybe... The strap
is...
Is
that a vest?
That's a vest.
Yeah.
We wouldn't call that a tank top.
No, the Americans do.
The Americans do.
But you know what a tank top is?
No,
over
what is
here?
It? No.
It's like a jumper without sleeves.
Wait.
Jersey.
A sweater vest. Cultural differences.
Wow, listen to us having fun with our languages.
Cultural differences. Do you know how I know it's called a sweater vest?
Because
of Friends.
Which I've never seen.
Because of Chandler, used to always wear a sweater vest.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Look at you.
Now, I like a sweater vest. We'll carry on with this.
Yeah.
I like a sweater vest, but you can't... It's a tough one to carry off. You've got to really... I would love to wear a tank top and a long sleeve shirt and a tie.
Yeah.
V-neck and a tie.
It's a very strapped in look.
Isn't... Sorry? Now, I don't know what that means. Is that Americanism?
Well, I've worn tank tops and blouses before, right?
Yes.
And once you're wearing that...
No.
You're very... It's very hot. It's very hot.
Yeah, I don't enjoy that as a... If I may say, I never enjoy it as a look on a woman, but I think it's a good one for a dude. I think you are telling yourself stories about yourself that might not be true.
Now, Sarah came in, and the second thing she said to me was, you're looking young.
You are looking young!
Yeah.
I think it's real.
Yeah, we
you
go.
You look like a see. Young dude.
This is great because
living a life.
I'm getting old. I feel old. I feel past it. No, I don't. I feel full of life. I tell you, I forgot. So, me and Catherine are starting a motorcycle club.
Brum, brum.
Which
in a real way, or are you being funny?
No, in a real way. We ride scooters up to 125 cc's. You'd be very well. I don't know if you ride any motor vehicles.
No. Learn it. It's great. Well, you can join.
If you learn it, you can join. But we have. So you, basically, you do a course for a day, and then you get to wear the L plates for 2 years. Okay. Am I making any sense here at all?
Yeah, I mean, this is something I know nothing about, but I'm following along.
And I will introduce you to Sarah in a second, dear listeners.
You know what's
going on. It's just suddenly a little bit random. But so you get these L plates.
Which
means
on my bike.
You're a learner. That L plate.
Wow!
Yeah, now we're talking, huh? Now it's visual, it's real. But after 2 years...
Wow.
You've got to do the day's training again. Or you can learn... You can take a test, a driving test. To take a motorcycle driving test, there are three parts. The theory part.
Right.
The off-road part of the test.
Right.
And the on-road part of the test.
Theory. Off-road.
Yes.
So what's... I'm confused with the difference between theory and off-road.
Theory is looking at road signs and stuff on a computer. Off-road is in a car park around cones.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Now, guess Clear. Who last week passed his theory test?
I think it's Ian.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Guess who today passed... his off-road driving test.
Ian!
Yes!
Because guess who ploughed in with no lessons? I was thinking, okay, we're going to do this. I'm going to get my instructor, who I had for my L plates, and we'll do it properly, and I'll get some training. And he just went and did it.
And here's the thing. Whoever completes Very all three confident. Stages first becomes president of Ian and Kath's Motorcycle Club.
It's a two-man club.
Can I go back a little farther and ask, when did this interest start, and did it come more from one than the other? How did it all begin? Who's the real leader?
We egged each other on.
The seed was sown by me.
Was it like a early midlife crisis?
It totally was. Right. I spent a lot of my summers in Spain on the back of boys'.
Oh, yeah, you did.
So I always had a little thing about it. And I always said to him, do you know what? I really would really like a scooter. And then he said one day, you said you were thinking of buying one. And I went, yeah, do it.
This story, in any way, by the way, this is a great format for a show. We get a guest on, and then they interview us about our lives. This is a great format.
I love an
format.
Origin story.
I just
go
beat
on.
That story.
Your version.
My version was, I was walking through town, no interest in scooters.
Right.
And I saw a second-hand scooter store off of Tottenham Court Road, and I saw a really old scooter that was just under £1,000, and I thought, I could buy that. I could afford that. And it suddenly planted a little seed, and it percolated.
Seed was already there, my friend.
Shut up. It percolated.
Uh-huh.
And eventually I went and bought one. Mm. And then I persuaded Catherine that she should get one.
Uh-huh. Well, now you bought me a lesson.
How many years ago was this thing, then?
Two years.
Oh, so recently.
Very recent.
And Catherine, one more question. The seeing something that costs £1,000 and go, how in character is that of Ian to do?
Totally in character.
It's like he's that dude, right?
Yeah, okay, and it'll take me a while because I save up and think about it and try and talk myself out of it. But you'd already bought me a lesson.
I bought you the lesson.
Then if you want to buy one, you can.
Yeah.
I think this is a beautiful story.
Yes.
I know I'm going to sound very American in this. Like, you're both helping each other you more helping her.
Yes.
To do these things.
Well, I saved a man's life recently. I don't know if you read that news story. Now.
I didn't. But don't.
Did you not? Let me Google it. No, I'll send you some
happened?
Links. No, I don't.
Wait, did you really?
No. I was teasing, and it only works if you know the story. Otherwise, it sounds arrogant, but. Yeah, I did. So, Sarah Barron is here.
Comedian. Yeah.
We're going in with that.
Yeah.
Are we going anywhere else? I mean, actor?
No, I did an
audition.
A little bit.
Okay.
I mean, mostly I'm just doing...
You did an audition, you were about to say, and I really...
Oh, I did an acting audition for the first time ever in my life, basically, and I was okay. I did what in the business they call a self-tape. So you put yourself, you sort of set up a camera and you record yourself and you email that. Whatever.
Was it you doing a character, or was you going, "Hi, I'm Sarah"?
I was doing a character.
Okay.
So you have to have someone who does a self tape for you.
Right.
And I was like, "All right, I'll." You know, it's just someone going, "Hey, would you pass the water?" "Yeah, I'll pass the water." So it's like they do nothing and you perform, and that's the deal, right?
Right.
And my husband had to do it, and he was so bad. it was unbelievable to me how terrible he was.
He's off camera.
He's off camera, and I just thought it would be like, you know, if his line is, "Yes, I'll pass you the water."
Mm.
"Oh, we're running late." But he did this. Oh, it was disgusting. It was, and then I couldn't do well because of how bad he was.
So I'm guessing you didn't get the part because
I didn't get the part. I mean, I was never going to get the part, but I thought I'd sort of make a good showing for myself and be like, yeah, she's got, you know, if she's playing something close to herself, she's got a kind of energy on camera. No, I was just, it was sad to watch. So I'm not an actor.
Oh, because of your lousy, stinking husband.
Have you seen the film Waiting for Guffman?
Yes. God, yes.
He was pure Waiting for Guffman, like, and I said, "Oh, but I will." It was astounding. I couldn't believe it. And I thought it was okay to make fun of him for it, because why is that a problem? He's not trying to be No. You hurt his feelings.
Hey.
I think because he didn't know how bad he was.
I just remembered something that he tweeted that caused a lot of upset in your family. I don't know if we should mention it.
Oh, no, mention it.
No, didn't he?
I'll tell my side.
What happened to your passport?
Oh.
This is properly tense. This was not a joke. This was a broken man who'd effed up.
Yeah, well, no, but so what happened was I did the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
I came back to London and it was...
Hero. You came back
a hero. I came back a hero.
Own it.
And it had been, you know, a good month, but a stressful one. We have a small child. I felt disconnected from my kid. So, you know, it's just like no swearing. So
you're allowed one shit.
But I've just used it. Good.
That's it. We're done.
I brought it in. So anyway, so I come back and I had to study for an immigration test.
Yeah.
And so I thought, when I was in Edinburgh, I was like, I can't study, so I'm just going to cram for this exam and give it a week, and then I'll show up. And then we were going to go to Chicago, where my family is, and just with my parents there, who would babysit for our child, and just be in the beautiful, you know, Indian summer and have this great time. So I show up with to take my test. I cram. It's all I do after four very stressful weeks. And I show up and I've got all the documents that they've asked for. And I sit down, this very bureaucratic environment. And the man says, "Miss Barron, may I see this? Miss Barron, may I see that?" And I hand over the things. And then he just goes, "Oh, you can't take the test today."
Oh.
I go, "Why not?" He goes, "Well, you registered that you were born in the UK." And he turns the screen to me. No, I didn't register for the exam. My husband did it for me. Now, you know what? I am a super reasonable person.
Oh, yeah, we noticed that. Yes.
I'm quite measured in my own way.
Mm.
So these things happen, but I, like, start crying, and I call my husband up, and I'm crying. I was like, he's like, and he just explodes with rage at the situation. So he's like, you know, I'll leave out the expletives, but this is tell them this, ask them this, this is insane. Obviously, we're born in the UK. Obviously, this was just 2 minutes. And I'm going, where's my apology? No big deal. But if the situation was reversed, I would have been going, oh my God, sweetheart, oh God, I'm so sorry. Okay, all right, how do I fix this? And he's just, so then we get to this pause.
Yeah.
A pregnant pause. He goes, are you mad at me? I go, yeah, I'm mad at you.
Wow.
He's like, what? And I was like, I'm saying, okay, but I need just an apology. And then we're off. And I'm walking through Stratford screaming, sobbing on my, you know, the long and short of it of this. Now what I'm worried is a very boring story, is that in the throes of my rage, my current visa, which is the size of a credit card, I still don't know what happened. I think it flew out of my passport. It was lost, which meant that the trip that we had booked, not only did it mean that I would have to spend what was supposed to be these idyllic 2 weeks studying for this test, it meant we couldn't go on the test.
Oh.
We couldn't go on the vacation.
Oh, no.
And my point was, if the question is whose fault it was that we had to cancel this all expenses paid holiday to the States 2 days before we were supposed to go, my fault. It was my fault I lost my visa.
Yeah.
But there's absolutely no question that I was owed an apology in that moment.
You would not have been flinging your arms around in such a ne'er-do-well fashion if it hadn't been for him.
That was, and you know, we always, like, you teach people how someone to treat you, how to treat you. It wasn't his fault I was flinging my arms around, but yes, it was. Like, be reasonable. And that's such a stereotypical way for a man to behave, like, that when they feel bad, they can't just say, I'm sorry.
Completely.
And he hates thinking of himself as that kind of alpha-y dude.
Yeah.
That's who he was in that moment,
I've
Ian.
I always thought he was very alpha, so I could never work with a guy.
He does have an ego.
He didn't apologize. I'm assuming you apologized for throwing your visa out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There we go. You see, well, then this guy's a jerk.
He's a jerk.
What is this? We have to be careful because he might be listening and he'll just be like a little tear.
No, as long as I'm selling myself, he'll be proud of me.
We'll talk about Edinburgh in a minute because last time you came on, you were just going to go up there and have a go, and it went quite well. We'll talk about the shows you're doing in a bit. 0344 499 1000, dear listener. This is Talk Radio,
the late night alternative with Ian Lee.
You could be dreaming and meeting each other in a dream
on Talk Radio.
Then you're, like, on U.S. soil or something, right?
All the doors from that American embassy, I don't know about the new one, but they're imported from America. They're American doors. What a great
God door. Bless us.
So who was right, who was wrong there?
I didn't have any of his stuff with me.
The evidence
Catherine,
has been presented.
What is your defence? Can you talk me through what was going through your mind?
I'm just very British and compliant, and I didn't feel like I could say no.
Right. So it almost felt, in a way, you were going to either be rude... You're going to look rude to the stranger.
Or they were going to kick me out of the queue.
Right.
Because they were bossy in that queue.
She apologise?
I did.
No.
I did.
I don't remember.
A lot.
I don't remember.
Yeah, because we fell out. When we started talking again, I did apologise a lot.
Don't remember.
I mean, I think that...
The apology
is
irrelevant.
Well, no. See, this is the thing. I think the apology is the thing. Yeah. That's everything is forgivable with the right apology.
I was apologising once. I was in. I'm so sorry. I got herded in. I'm so sorry.
Please let her finish.
I don't want to hear.
And do you feel that it's a disingenuous apology?
Yeah, it's bullshit.
You really think that?
I've used up my second S
that's
word.
That's your second one.
Now we're in trouble. Now we've crossed the line. I've got to pay for that.
I don't do disingenuous apologies.
You should have just waited.
I know that now,
like,
but I didn't realise they were going to herd us all through in a massive chunk like that.
So then how long extra did you have to wait to get in?
Like an hour.
No, you were about 10 minutes behind me.
About 25 minutes.
He wasn't far behind me.
Significant. I was actually quite a long way behind you. And then you're in the machine, you've got to take the ticket.
This
and
is
then...
the thing. Once you get into the embassy, then you're in another queue, right?
Yeah,
it makes no sense at all, right?
Yeah.
You're just sitting in this big, like an airport lounge, and there doesn't seem to be any kind of logic to it whatsoever. And in the end, we ended up like 5 minutes apart.
Here's another relevant question, I think, to who's right. That was...
Uncalled for,
nothing
right?
Uncalled happened. For. Nothing. Nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
Is this, again, Catherine, is this typical Ian?
Huh?
He forgets his stuff in the... It can't just be easy. It's never just easy. He's always forgetting. Is that a thing that happens a lot?
I mean, things are very rarely straightforward.
I'm artistic.
Right.
I'm artistic. Artistic.
Yeah.
I'm creative.
Yeah.
So yeah,
but when you do
variety.
It, but when you do it, I'm really nice about it. And when I do it, you go nuts.
Because you do it.
Right. See, this is all. I mean, I basically think you're right. Right. Like, I think she should
She's
have
pointing to me.
Waited. Yeah. Yes. I think Ian's. You know.
I know. I should have waited.
Correct. And you should have sort of stepped back and was like, "I'm just waiting for a friend. I'm just waiting for a friend. I'm just waiting for a friend. I'm just trying to understand if, given the larger context,
it wasn't like it was in the front. Like you're going, screw him. I'm out of here.
No. No.
Which is, I think, what he assumed.
You sort of cracked under the pressure.
Yeah.
Right?
I just went, oh, okay. Yeah.
But I think if that was me, I would have been like, oh, no, he does this all the time. Like, I'm done. This is classic him. I'm
please,
in this situation now.
Please don't bring your issues
right.
with your
but I'm
partner.
Saying, that's what I'm saying. Bring my baggage into it.
I don't want it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, if it had to be a black or white thing, Ian's right.
Yeah.
By the way,
the way he dealt with it was awful. Horrible.
If this was a show on radio, Sarah Baron solves... people's issues.
Oh, it's my...
I'd listen.
Dream.
Sarah Baron judges.
I would listen.
My dream
That'd be
is
great.
Casting judgment and get it, like, the decider.
Yeah. The decider.
Sarah Baron is the decider.
The decider.
That's a format.
Yeah, because I'm very, I really like to consider the different sides, and I love the dynamics.
Yeah.
I love the dynamics.
I, One of my favourite shows for a long time was Judge Judy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
did
yeah,
you see
yeah.
the episode with Johnny Rotten on?
I don't know it very well. My mother-in-law is obsessed with it, and I'm obsessed with RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh.
Yes. Paul Charles is obsessed with yeah. Judge Judy.
Yes.
Judge, go and watch, dear listener, go to YouTube, watch the Judge Judy episode with Johnny Rotten. It's incredible.
Huh.
Actual Johnny Rotten
okay.
being sued by a drummer. But years and years ago, me and a producer came up with an idea for a show where it was me, he's like Judge Judy, but with kids. So kids would come in and go, she was a dick, and she called me this.
Do you want to just spend and, like half an hour at my house?
Yeah, and then I'd go, right, whoa, and I'd solve kids' problems. Wouldn't that be great?
See, this, but, like, I want the adult stuff. I want, like, the big talk,
the
right?
Decider,
the
yeah.
tell me the stuff. What's the dynamic? Does Ian do it all? Oh.
Yeah.
And what's so interesting is you guys have such a good relationship.
Well.
Because it's not marriage, right?
Yeah.
So people are, you're going to be more open because it is ultimately a friendship and a colleague relationship.
It's, yeah. it's a forced
but
work relationship.
It's a forced relationship.
I can tell him to go whistle and go home and forget about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas,
but it's so intimate because you work together in such an mm-hmm. intimate way.
Anyway, Kath was basically in the wrong there, and I think we've accepted
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
let's
but
just put a full stop.
You dealt with it horribly.
Let's just put a full stop.
You enjoyed
on.
It. He does enjoy it. He enjoys the sulk.
I don't enjoy having an idiot as a friend.
Oh, so harsh.
Now, last time we saw you, Sarah,
yeah.
you were it was July of last year, and
yes.
you were off to your first ever Edinburgh Festival as a performer.
Yes.
It went well. I know it went well.
Thank you.
But I'll ask you, how did it go for you personally? How did you find it all?
I found it, like, do you know those things where you're like, as it's actually happening, you're kind of not loving it, but you know you'll look back on it in a very fond way?
Yeah.
One of those.
It's called life.
It's called life. So I enjoyed it, but I had a kid with me. It was hard to have a kid with me in Edinburgh. But I kind of liked the grind, and
yeah.
I liked partying a little bit.
Good reviews.
Thanks.
Really good reviews.
Thank you.
You must be pleased with how it went.
Yeah.
As
yeah,
a performer.
I am pleased with how it went.
But you don't really believe it, do you?
No, do you know what it is? I don't. I'm trying to receive compliments in a likable way.
Yeah.
I'm really stuck in my head receiving the compliments. So I want to, like, talk about how amazing I am and how amazing my show was.
Yeah.
How everyone should come and see it.
Yeah.
But how do I do it in a way that seems like really
likable?
Yeah, really likable.
Well, when me and Kath went to New York, eventually we got there.
Right. So when did you go? When were you there?
That was a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Now,
okay. Well,
we had a week in New York. It was great. But we met loads of podcasters and comedians and things over there, and listened to a lot of podcasts. And the things that I was going to say Americans, but specifically New York. But people, I guess, is they're so good at selling themselves without any shame. So they'll do the, okay, you're about to listen to our podcast, but before that, today we're sponsored by Terry's Tyres, and Terry's Tyres are the greatest. And listen, if you just go to their website, it helps this podcast survive. And
they know that you know it's a hustle, but no one cares.
And we kind of nicked that. We nicked that. Instead of doing that British, thanks very much for listening. Like, you've chosen the right thing to listen to. And by the way, we're selling T-shirts. And if you go to this website and you buy T-shirts, it helps us make this, not this show, but it helps us make the podcast and it helps.
Yeah.
And we kind of nicked that. But it's a tough thing to do, the big sell of oneself.
Yeah, I find it really uncomfortable. I don't know.
Okay.
I think that's why I culturally identify as one of you.
Well, then we need to because we've got some tickets to sell.
Yeah,
we've
I got some tickets.
We're
going to
sell some tickets.
I mean,
we're going to put
I did a show. It went well.
It had. This isn't. I'm not even giving a compliment. I'm stating fact. It had great reviews.
I sold out.
That's what everyone's saying.
That's what everyone
said. Oh, you mean tickets you sold, yes.
Oh, yeah, I sold out. Oh, my God, I would sell out in a second. Oh, God. I just want some money.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. So it went well, and so... See how I'm already tripping
up? Yeah, I know.
Up?
I'm falling off
a cliff.
I'm finding it fascinating. I'm not enjoying watching you struggle, but you're doing the show in Soho now.
So,
the brilliant Soho Theatre.
And it was so great. So the show went really great. I got a nomination. It was such a special thing. It was special to share it with my family. And I'm now doing some dates at Soho Theatre off the back of a really storming Edinburgh. And I'd love people
is this
to
what
come
you did
see
into
it.
The camera.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love people to come see it. But if you guys are going to come, wait, I'm really about to hit a groove though.
I'm putting the aircon on. I'm not going.
But I was going to hit a groove.
I'm going to go through the other groove.
Now, like, it's
go.
Like my...
Have
gosh.
I killed the vibe?
She was doing a run-up then, and you just completely stood in the way.
I was making it a bit cooler, and it's getting so hot because her groove was so groovy.
I don't want to do it anymore now.
Okay. Don't go and see her show.
It went really well in Edinburgh. And so?
So now I'm going to do a week at Soho Theatre, but if you want to come, buy those last tickets.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
And I think the only question that we can ask after that that speech, the evening with the vote of no confidence, very tight, the speech from Theresa May is, I think we have to ask Narina Palo, how are your cats? Is it one cat? Is it multiple? Was there a problem? You had a cat that...
Hasn't it got a very good memory?
Well, I've just got two new kittens, so I'm attuned to the cat world. You had a cat that came in. Yeah. Narina Palo is here to listen. This is Catherine.
Yay!
Good evening. And we are live. If you want to give us a call, 03444991000. Narina Palo, one of my favourite singers. I'm not going to, you know, but... I simply adore you. You're fantastic. I'm a huge fan.
He's had his haircut specially.
Oh, bless.
That to one side.
Thank you.
Tell us about the cat.
So yes, last time I saw you, I had a pregnant cat, and she gave birth to four kittens.
Wow.
And I kept one of the kittens. I've called him Dave.
Yeah.
He's very entertaining. And my poor husband, who's massively allergic to cats, has had to go and see an allergist and get special drugs
Good.
For it.
Is he on drugs just to keep the pet?
Yes.
Wow. That's incredible. Now, am I right? Because come a little bit closer to the microphone, because these are not very good mics. But the cat, the pregnant cat, you didn't own. It just kind of moved in with you.
What happened was we'd gone out for dinner, and we'd imbibed quite a bit, and a bit more, and a bit more. And my husband and I came in, and it was like a rainstorm. And we got in the hallway, and we're like, is there a cat in the house? He's like, nah, you just drank a lot, love. I was like, no, there's a cat in the house. And there was a cat in the house.
Brilliant.
We put the lights on, and I realised that she was really small and really wide.
Yeah.
So we can't let her out. She's obviously pregnant. She must belong to someone. The next morning, I dumped her out. Not dumped her, but, you know, she didn't leave. She stayed forever. And she had these little kittens, and they were so sweet.
Because we have a listener called Roger who stole a cat.
Oh.
He stole a cat, and yours sounds like, okay, you tried to get rid of her, but she kept coming back.
Yeah, and then someone did steal her, and that upsets me, Roger.
Yeah, Roger, if you're listening... he was it the story? He was at work and this cat came.
Oh, yeah.
And so he sort of just kept it after one visit from the cat.
I think that was the story.
Roger, if we're libelling you, 03444991000, if you don't call in, then we know that you're a scumbag.
And we'll carry on calling you Roger, cat snatcher.
Absolute scumbag. I've got my very old cat Velvet, who's going to be 20 in March.
That's amazing. That is
old, skin and bones and completely deaf. And then... Just before Christmas, I got two rescue kittens. They were 6 months old, who my boys... They had the wonderful names of Misty and Melody. And I said to my boys, look, they're young enough. We can change their names if we want. And they said, OK. And straight away they said, how about Lucky and Mucky? I went, OK, that's a great place to start. Let's see. No, we like Lucky and Mucky. And every time I'd say, have we got any more thoughts on the cat? Yeah, Lucky and Mucky.
So is that what they're called
They're
now?
Called Lucky and Mucky. They're called Lucky and
At
Mucky.
At least it rhymes.
It rhymes. Although, as Kath says, calling a cat Lucky is...
It's a kiss of death, isn't
that's
it?
That's tempting fate. But so I got these little cats, these little girls, and I got them just for Christmas. They're sisters. And Catherine is not allowed cats. So they are kind of her cats by proxy.
Yeah, I have to visit them.
Come and visit them.
Why are you not allowed cats?
I've got a husband that just hates cats.
Oh, how does he hate cats?
I don't know. I'm wondering how much he hates cats.
Oh.
I'm wondering whether I can test that theory.
But I'm very proud because when they came in, they were rescue cats, and they spent the first 3 weeks just... I've got a piano, and it's pushed up against the wall. You know, the space between the wall and the piano.
Yeah, yeah.
They spent the first 3 weeks just in there together.
Hiding
just
behind
looking
it.
Up. Like that. But they've just over Christmas and now they've just started to come out and they're now sitting on laps and they're causing mate. Cats are the best.
How's your older cat dealing with the new
She
ones?
Is not very happy because I've had to lock the cat flap for a while.
Okay.
So she's not cool with that. And the younger cats will go up and see her and she's like,
Okay, right. But then they start hissing
they
at her
really
and stealing her food.
They can really make you think you ruined their life, can't they? They've got that look, cats. They specialise in it.
They're the best company, aren't
they? Yeah, they are.
The best.
Yeah.
Now, you've moved. Dave has come with you.
Dave has come with me. Mum's called Joni.
Joni. And they're cool with the move?
They were. I did the thing. You're meant to lock your cats up for 2 to 3 weeks, they say. And some people say put butter on their paws. I've never really got to the bottom of that wisdom. No idea.
Isn't it that they're supposed to kind of, they lick their way back or something? I've heard that. I've never done that.
It's sort of things that Tory MPs do, isn't it? For fun or something.
Put butter on something.
Jacob Rees-Mogg doing that for kids.
Rees-Mogg would never have a cat lick his penis. Let's just say that for legal reasons. For legal reasons, that has never happened.
Why did you give us that image?
I'm sure it never would.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to get that out of my mind.
But.
So let's move this away from that.
Noreen is instantly regretting coming in. Why couldn't I come in on James Whale or Matthew Wright's show? This is not fun.
Oh, my word.
So you've had them for two or three weeks. You've not put butter on their paws.
That's correct.
But they've gone out.
Yes, but one of them, the mum, is a Houdini.
Oh.
And I couldn't, it's very stressful. Cats can make you very stressed. There was this wonderful article, I think it was in The Guardian, and it was about this woman with a cat called Kevin, which I love. I love those really prosaic names for cats. They're fantastic. I'm waiting to get another dog so I can call it Stuart. I think it's a great, brilliant dog. And she said, you know what, I thought I felt safe and secure until I got a cat.
Yeah.
And it's like having a really bad boyfriend, isn't it? Or that kind of never knowing where you stand with them.
Oh, I've only been in this house 4 months. It's not mine anymore. They own it. They've got the run of it. They've worked out how to open the bin and jump in and pull out the packets of food and eat them.
Smart. And it's a press down to flip open.
Oh, yeah,
bins.
I can
How do you describe what
that?
They do?
Like Super Mario. They must jump on it.
They just bounce it open. Well, put the headphones on, Narina, because...
Has Roger called?
We've got a scumbag on the line. We've got a cat... He's a cat burglar, and I don't mean in the romantic sense. He actually steals animals. Roger, would you like to explain to Narina Palo, please, exactly what you did, you scumbag?
Good evening, Ian. Good evening, Catherine. And good evening, Narina.
Hello.
He's libelling me. Ignore that nasty man.
Tell us the story and let her be the judge.
She'd been coming for weeks. The cat had been visiting where I do my voluntary work. She'd been coming for weeks.
Hang on. Notice he had to put in his voluntary work.
I'm a very good man.
Go on, carry on, cat thief.
Well, yeah, she was living. She was living in the warehouse, and sometimes she was spending time at the place. Next door, the car
house with her owners.
And I really felt sorry for her. And nobody had time to take her to a vet to see whether she'd been chipped. So I took her home.
Oh,
took her to a vet.
Whoa! The logical thing would be, so I took her to the vet.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I did.
All right, okay.
And was she chipped?
Yes, she was chipped. I think I called Kath about it when you were off.
And Kath doesn't tell me what happens. So go on.
I didn't believe a word of it.
Yeah, but what happened was that I took her to the vet. The veterinary nurse checked her for a chip, couldn't find one. So I booked an appointment with a vet for a checkup.
Yeah.
And took her back half hour later.
Yeah.
Oh, the vet found a chip. It was in a different place to what they usually put.
Oh, I say.
She'd been missing for about 2 months.
Oh, wow. So did the cat go home?
Yep.
Oh, you did the right thing in the end then.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the cat went home.
I can see why you called in, Roger.
Yeah.
I don't actually believe this part of the story.
No, if you listen carefully, you hear...
He's always bullying me.
What was her name in the end? Did you find out her name?
Didn't find anything out about her, sadly. She was black and white, so we started calling her Oreo.
Here's what you need to do, man. This is what I did. I went on loads of local Facebook groups and found loads of different cat rescue centres and groups. And there's, like, big ones, like the Cats Protection League, and there's small ones that are run from the home of elderly couples. And just get on there and say, look, I'd like a rescue cat. What you got? What can you get me?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Do it, man. It's the best. It's the best.
I'm going to get a cat.
And get a black one, because no one goes for the black ones.
I don't know why nobody goes for black ones. My first cat was a gorgeous black cat with green eyes.
Because people think they're unlucky. I think there's two schools of thought. Some countries think they're unlucky. Some think they're really lucky.
I think they're beautiful.
Yeah. The stray mum is a black cat.
Yeah, I've always had black cats. Velvet's black. Mucky is completely black. And Lucky is black with bits of white. And I went to visit these gorgeous girls. And the people that were fostering them said, no one wants them because they're black. I said, they're coming with me. No, they're coming. I'm not having that. And they're the best.
I know. I don't know why people have that superstition. Even years ago, it's silly.
One of the reasons I heard, I don't know how true this is, that people don't want black cats is because they don't look good in selfies.
I can believe that
this
now.
This is one of the things, but I don't know. Roger, I apologise for calling you a scumbag.
I accept your apologies.
But I do still think you're a scumbag, OK? Thank you very much indeed, Roger. Outrageous behaviour. I don't believe a word of that. 0344 499 1000. It's always weird starting the show 10 minutes late, and it's weird times.
We had the night off yesterday, so it feels like a Monday.
Yesterday I was in bed very early. Narina Palo is here. You don't want to talk Brexit. You don't want to talk Brexit, do you?
Is there anybody anymore?
Well, this is the thing, right? And I understand why we didn't do the show yesterday. I listened to a little bit of it, and it was a great show. You know, it was a really important day in Britain, but everywhere is just like Brexit. And coming up on the next show, they're going to be talking about Brexit for another 3 hours. It's so boring, and I don't understand any of it.
I don't think anybody does. I don't, especially not Parliament.
We're all screwed. That much I know. We're all doomed. Okay, good. I was worried that you might want to come in and go, but this is my chance to show everybody that I know what's what in politics.
What about our previous experience of Narina made you think that that's what she would come in and want to do?
Sometimes these pop stars, they want it. It's like when David Cassidy didn't want to be in the Partridge Family anymore, and so he did an interview with Rolling Stone where he was pictured naked and talked about smoking drugs.
David Cassidy?
Yeah.
God bless his
career.
His soul.
Is he still...
No,
how old? Died. He died about...
Someone might have killed him off and he was still alive.
He died November 2017... about the same day as Charles Manson. There you go. Those are the...
Did he die as well? Yeah. I completely missed last year.
Really?
It's like it didn't happen.
What were you up to?
I think listening to the news about Brexit. Really. Was there any other news?
What are you doing work-wise? Because you've come in just because you wanted to come in. It's not because it's like there's a brand new album.
No, I've nothing to plug.
But this is amazing. This is amazing. But are you doing anything at the moment? Because you had... Now, Stay Lucky, was that last year?
Yeah, last time I saw you was... It was just at the end of 2017.
Yeah. Right, okay.
Oh. Yeah.
So then what happens when you do an album and you put it out and you've written it and it's produced and it's and you've done all the concerts to kind of promote, what do you do then? Are you then going, I need to get another record?
No, you tour. So I spent last year touring a lot. Here in Europe and loads of festivals.
Yeah.
And then you try, and in between that, you try and write for your next record, which is where I am at the moment.
Because this is a criticism of the industry, not you, but no one's selling as many records as people were selling 20 years ago. It's now, whereas before, people, you know, a big act would make money on the records and then go out and tour. Now it's the other way around.
Yeah,
the touring is how you earn your living.
What's happening now is people are almost making records to have a reason to tour.
Right, okay.
So they're treating records a bit more like merchandise, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I think I can kind of see it's a return to actually what it was like in the 60s and 70s. That was what was happening.
Yeah.
People were making their money on the road. And then they'd suddenly have a record that would blow up.
Mm.
But now, even if you're doing billions of streams, it's really hard to make a living. Songwriters, the cut on the way we're streaming music is much, much less than it used to be if you were buying actual records.
Is that... No, we know Spotify's a bad deal for artists.
It is and it isn't.
Go on.
So, as far as the major record labels are concerned, Spotify's great.
Because
they get a big chunk of money, and they often get an advanced chunk of money.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then what they do with it, what the big majors do with it, is they distribute it as they feel fit.
So it doesn't necessarily go to the artist that's generating it.
Music business accounting is such a dark art.
Yeah.
That it's just, unfathomable.
I didn't know that. I thought just Spotify was just a lousy payer, but of course someone's making money out of it.
If you think about it, one stream is 0.001 penny. But having said that, when we were all buying records, yeah. we're all say similar age,
yeah.
and we were paying what? If you wanted a hot ticket record, I remember paying 16 quid for mm-hmm. OK Computer.
Yeah.
I do happen to like OK Computer, so I did listen to it. But you might go and spend that on a record and you might listen to it three times.
Yeah.
But you'd paid all that money. Now, say you buy a record or you go and you stream a record over and over and over again,
yeah.
you could effectively be paying for it more than just buying it once. Do you see what I,
yeah.
you see what I mean?
But music is... Spotify is one thing. I'm not signed up to it. I signed up for a bit and I just thought, actually, I'm not getting... If I like something, I'm going to buy the CD. I'm going to have it and I'm going to own it.
Do you have a CD player at home?
Yeah, yeah. And I've got tape decks.
So I've got tape decks.
I've got vinyl, but I've realised I've got no CD player.
Oh, mate, get a CD player.
Except in my car.
Well, yeah, you haven't even got that in your car, have you?
No.
When I bought my last car, I asked for a tape deck and they went, what? What's that? I said, it's okay, that's fine, I'll stick with this.
But they were even surprised when you wanted a CD player, weren't
they? Yeah, they were, but I like the physical... They're in my car. I like having a physical... thing to hold. Yeah. I like how they look on shelves.
Yeah.
You know, I think they look stunning.
And it turns out, we had this conversation on Monday, didn't we, that you don't get to keep things the way you think you do when you download
them.
This
is the thing as
well. Yeah, when your Wi-Fi goes down.
When your Wi-Fi goes down. But also, I've seen a few accounts of people have bought films on, like, Amazon or iTunes and then gone to the library, like, a year later and the film has gone.
Yeah.
And they've got in touch with the supplier and they said, oh, no, we don't have the license for that film anymore. So you think you've bought it, but you don't actually own it. During that song, I ran down to the car to get an Imani CD. For Narina Palos here, because when was your first hit?
2006. I put an album out around the same time as Imani.
Right, okay.
So I was aware of her, and I think I bought that out. It was really good. It was
it's
really
a great
unusual.
Album. Yeah.
Legend of Chicago.
She got bored of being a pop. She did the first album, and Columbia Records said, we want you to do more of that and more sampling. We like it when you sample 60s songs. And she went, I don't really want to do that, and I'm not really enjoying the pop star thing. It's not what I thought it would be, so I'm going to go and do some stuff on my own. Thanks very much. And she walked away from it.
But she's still doing music.
She's
right?
still doing music. Yeah. She released it. I mean, she's absolutely nuts, and we love Imani. She's been on the show a few times. You've got to hover over the dump button.
She's a real.
She's brilliant.
People use this term a lot, but she's a real free spirit, you know.
Yeah.
And she will. You'll know her within 10 minutes of talking to her. And she's one of those people that when she's talking to you, you feel like she's looking right into your soul, you know. She's really perceptive, isn't she?
She's great. I love her so much. And she lives in New York. And when we went and did the show over there, she invited us over. And like, when I went over there last time with my boys, she said, oh, you're in town? Let me take the boys out. And she took us to see
a
film that was not really age-appropriate, but that was... But it was
she
brilliant.
She wouldn't have thought of it like that.
No. And the boys just totally fell in love with her. And she just releases these incredible albums to kind of a very small, hardcore audience. But she's stunning. So I just thought you might enjoy that. There might be a few tracks on there that you might dig. Narina Palo is here. Well, you're not here to talk business. Let's talk a little bit of business. Not touring now?
Yes, I am, actually.
Oh, are you?
It's a really odd thing. It was summer when I accepted this. My agent said, why don't you go to Scotland and do a little mini tour?
Oh.
In February.
That's going to be chilly, isn't
it's
it? Take
very
your thermals.
Chilly. So at the end of Feb, I'm up. I'm doing Bute, Inverness, Aberdeen and Dundee.
Oh, fantastic,
yeah.
though.
So that should be fun. So it's just like a mini tour, and then I'm doing a few London shows. What day are we today? 16th?
Yeah.
So in a couple of weeks. But I think they're all sold out, apart from one of them. Have you been to Zadel?
No.
It's a beautiful venue in Piccadilly. Brasserie Zadel, but they have this cabaret...
Oh, really?
Sort of venue inside it. It's not very big, but it's fantastic. It's called the Crazy Cox Cabaret.
I'm amazed you haven't heard of it.
It's spelled COQ, everybody.
Oh. See, thank you.
That'll be why.
Put your smutty jokes away.
I got it in before you did. I'm not going
to
say that.
You'd love to get a crazy cock in, wouldn't you?
Oh, my
no, that was too
God.
Far. That was too far.
I mean,
that was too far. She made me... You're a witness,
no,
Marina.
No,
she made
no,
me
she
say
didn't.
That.
She didn't.
She made me say that. Are there still tickets for that?
I think there are a few. Oh, if you guys want to come, the last show,
yeah.
there. I've got a few tickets, but the other two are sold out.
I wouldn't hassle you for comps. We'd pay.
But it depends if you're doing a show.
Well, what time are you finishing? Could you finish a little bit earlier?
No.
Could we sneak out
halfway? Second set I go on at 9. It's not going to really work for
you. What date? Well, look, because...
31st of Jan.
I'm not averse to... We've taken days off for concerts.
I can, I can bring your favourite songs forward. If you just send me an email.
Yes, all the hits at the front. Yeah. Bring the encore to the front, please. Yeah. That's
it's a Thursday. Not that that makes any difference.
Let's just take it off.
If you want to come, I can't. You're doing this on air. What, you're going to throw a sickie?
No, just say.
Well, we have. Here's the thing. Years ago,
about ten years ago,
I'm a big fan of the Bare Naked Ladies. Right? I know they're a cool band, but I love them. And about 10 years ago, I was doing a show on LBC, and two of them came in, including one of them was called Stephen Page. And at the end of it, they said, "Oh, we really enjoyed the interview. You're going to come to the gig on Friday?" And I said, "Nah, man. You know, I can't. I've got to do this. I'll catch you next time you come round." So after that tour, Stephen Page left the band, and it's, you know, and ever since then, it's been like, if there's a good gig that I may not get to see again, I'm quite happy to take a day off work.
Although Noreen is very unlikely to break up with herself.
Exactly.
Especially if she falls out.
I had my moment, I bet.
We'll have a check. If we don't do it this time, we will come and see you, because we saw you at the Hospital Club, was it?
That was the album showcase,
That was lovely.
It was very hot that day, wasn't it?
Very hot. You wanted some air conditioning,
That's right. And then someone started nudging me and saying, Dave Stewart's in the audience. And I'd always heard, because he owns that place.
Oh.
But I always thought it was a bit apocryphal and that he never actually had anything to do with it. And then the moment someone told me Dave Stewart was watching the gig, I was like, I just ruined it for me.
Wow. Well, see, I did see a guy wearing a massive silver hat that was spinning round in different directions. You remember when he did that once on the Brits or something? Remember the hat he wore?
He wasn't wearing that at the gig.
He wasn't wearing that at the gig. Was he there? Wow.
Yeah, apparently. And, I mean, just it's a horror when someone whose music has been a massive... Yeah. You know, the Eurythmics... He and Annie Lennox were massive.
What a voice, man. Yeah. She's got such a great voice, and I don't think... Well, maybe she does get credit for it. I don't really follow the credit givers.
I think everyone knows she's a pretty amazing
voice,
singer.
Isn't she?
Yeah.
So who are you? So you're doing some shows, and a new album, is anything happening?
I'm writing it at the moment. I'm in the studio. What are we... Yeah, 3 weeks' time. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm starting to start tracking. But I have no idea apart from that.
Is there a vibe to it? Is there like a sort of theme for the songs?
I've got a theme lyrically and a theme visually. I know I've got I had an idea. I'm not going to say any more.
No, okay, no, don't.
And I'm going to try and pin it around a concept.
Is it Brexit?
No.
Is it Trump?
No.
Because your last album was...
I'm with him. I just pretend he doesn't exist.
The last album was Dirty.
Denial. Was it Dirty?
There was a couple of filthy songs in there about... Yeah. Basically, there was a song, and I can't remember the exact lyrics, but it was basically, come up to the bedroom.
Come back to bed.
Come and give me one.
Yeah. Basically, yeah.
That's what it was.
You say that's dirty.
I think it's filth. I think it's disgusting. And it shouldn't be. I don't want that in my pop songs. I want Holding Hands and Skipping.
It's like your boy said, why are so many songs about love?
Yeah, it's true. Well,
some aren't, man.
But can you imagine songs about Brexit? No one wants a song about Brexit, do they?
No one does.
Mike Reed would do one.
Mike Reed did a Calypso, UKIP Calypso, didn't he?
What?
Remember Mike Reed, DJ? Gave me my first ever pork pie. That's a true thing.
UKIP Calypso?
YouTube it. I mean, it's something
you
know.
I wonder if... Hang on a minute.
Oh, my God. I know he did an Oscar Wilde musical, didn't he?
Yes, he did. That's my favourite thing. And it opened one night and then it closed.
I know.
Was that inspired by Cliff doing Heathcliff? The Oscar Wilde thing.
Here we go. Right. Headphones on, guys. Headphones on. Here we go. This is UKIP Calypso. Here we go.
I can't believe this.
And remember, this is not an actual Jamaican, yes.
When we're in power and we engage, there'd be no tax on the minimum wage. Leaders committed a cardinal sin. Open the borders, let them all come.
In what world did he think that was acceptable? Stand up and be counted. Is it like all the radio and DJs from the 1980s got together and said, we're going to just ruin that period of great radio? We're going to kiddie fiddle, be racist, be UKippers.
This, of course, Mike Reed is not a kiddie fiddler. His only crime. Well, he's got two crimes. One was releasing that. The other one was hosting an evening with Chevy Chase and ruining it.
Talking about tennis.
He hosted an evening at Hammersmith Odeon where it was him interviewing Chevy Chase, the comedian, actor.
I love Chevy Chase.
But didn't talk to him like about, so what was it like doing National Lampoon or what was it like doing Caddy Shack.
It was more about him trying to court Chevy Chase as his friend, I think. It was like, so I'm really good at tennis. How are you at tennis? I hear you play around tennis. It's like, who's got me to talk about tennis?
Chevy Chase, original drummer in Steely Dan.
No, what?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, when they were all at college together. I think they were all at Bard.
How funny.
And Chevy Chase was in the first sort of configuration of Steely Dan.
How funny. Yeah. I wonder if they kicked him out for being an a-hole. Because nobody, you speak to anybody who's worked with Chevy Chase, no one has a good word to say about him. Bill Murray, you constantly refuse.
What, he's just nasty?
Got into cocaine in a big way. Yeah. And, you know, cocaine is a very, very nasty...
No one ever got nicer on cocaine.
No, exactly.
It's true. But got into it a lot. And just... There's a brilliant quote from Bill Murray. Well, they all became famous during Saturday Night Live. And Bill Murray said, look, you've got 2 years of becoming super famous where you become an a-hole, right? And you've got 2 years to get over that and go back to being a nice person. And if you don't do it within those 2 years, you're an a-hole for the rest of your life. And
he missed the deadline.
He missed the deadline, yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, thoroughly unpleasant gentleman, apparently. But a comedy genius.
How did Mike Reed fare with that, then? Did Chevy Chase come out a bit well? Because that's worrying,
yeah,
isn't it?
Chevy Chase came out
a bit like the gentleman.
Like a hero. We had people phoning. It was a big thing, people phoning up that night going, I just spent £35 on a ticket and I don't know what I saw. It was lousy.
They said it was the most uncomfortable night ever, but I think I loved it.
Let's see if we can turn this into the most uncomfortable night ever. Good evening, Nigel.
Oh, hi, guys. All right.
Hello, Nigel. I thought you were going to start with a Frank Spencer or something.
Well, no. I'm a bit tired tonight.
Okay, too tired for Frank.
Actually.
Have you been on your bike?
Yeah, I did another 20 miles. I suppose it would make you tired at my age, wouldn't it? 70.
You're not 70.
I'm 70 now.
When was your birthday?
No, I'm 60, nearly 62.
Great joke. Always a great joke to pretend you're just over 8 years older than you actually are. Oh, Nigel. We've got Narina Palo here.
Yeah, hello.
Hello, Nigel. How are you doing?
Well, apart from being tired, but I had some good news tonight. I sold my mum's watch and ring after she died. You didn't know my mum died, did you?
Yes, we did.
No, the lady... Narina
was unaware. That Nigel's
no,
mum passed
I, oh,
away.
I'm so
not
sorry,
too,
Nigel.
Not too
yeah,
long ago.
Yeah, I didn't really want to sell her a gold watch and a gold ring. I got £60 for the two, which wasn't bad, really.
No, why... Can I ask why you decided to sell it?
Because I was short. I haven't got enough money for food until next week.
Oh, mate.
So, yeah, I was down to quite a low percentage of money.
Where did you £60 sounds a little light for such treasures. Where did you take it? Don't name the place, but what kind of place was it?
No. A friend of mine who lives in the village where I live, he's got an antique shop, and he knows all about these things. But the watch was only gold. The watch was gold, but the chain wasn't.
Okay.
The actual bracelet wasn't. Okay.
Well, that's a shame. That's a shame. But they're just things, aren't they?
They're things that were just wasting away on the table. So
okay. If you could make better use of it in that way, then I suppose
I need the
so.
Money, of course. Yeah, I need the money. But yeah. I've still got my mum's wedding ring she gave me in hospital, and I won't never give it away.
Yeah, I think that's probably right to keep
it. I wear it in bed as well, you know, to keep in contact with mum somehow, you know.
Now, listen,
it's with me.
Narina is a singer. Mm. One of my favourite singers. I don't know if I mentioned that.
Narina.
I wondered, do you feel like singing us a song tonight?
Well, I got a song ready, Saving All My Love For You by Whitney Houston, I was going to do.
I love that song.
Are you going to do it? Were you a fan of Whitney?
Yeah, of course.
That was
lovely
sad,
song. It's not too noisy for the time of night.
Are you going to sing it live or are you going to play a tape?
I'm going to sing it live.
Here we go. Then listen, away you go, Nigel. This is your time to shine.
Shall I do it now, then?
Yes, please, mate. Thank you.
I was on Opportunity Knox once, years ago.
Yes, that was okay.
That's a long time ago.
I was in the audience of Swap Shop once, but anyway, that's true. Okay, let's have it.
Okay, I'll talk about that another time.
Yeah.
Here we go. Enjoy.
We will. No one can look at each other in this room.
A few stolen moments is all that we share. You've got your family and they need you there. Though I try to resist being last on your list, but no other man. It's not very easy living all alone. My friends try to tell me, find a woman of your own. But each time I try, I just break down and cry. 'Cause I'd rather be home feeling blue.
Come on, Nigel.
'Cause I'm safe.
Save it for too long, otherwise.
Thank you very much.
Go off.
No, that was brilliant, Nigel. What did you think, Narina?
I thought it was lovely. Nigel, is Whitney Houston one of your favourite singers?
Yeah, she used to be once. But I still enjoy her songs, of course. Nobody to replace Whitney, was there, really?
Nobody.
That was her first big hit, wasn't it?
Pardon?
That was her first big hit, I think.
Yes, it was one of.
Where did I want to dance with somebody? That's the one I first noticed.
That was June 4th, 1987. It was number one, and the reason I know that it was number one the day my sister was born.
Hey!
Yeah. I just re-bought that album on CD because I only had it on tape.
There you go.
Does Narina know I'm a drummer?
She does.
Ian did mention it. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, well, I think I was on Opportunity Knocks about 30 years ago, drumming with an organist. I was, because I got the letter. Yeah, I was on Opportunity Knocks with Huey Green, you know.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Nigel.
That's a long time ago.
It certainly is. It certainly is.
Thank you, Narina, for listening. And
it was a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed it.
It's
very nerve-wracking singing live, too, isn't it?
Was that? Sorry, I missed that.
It's nerve-wracking singing live.
Yeah, it is. But you know what? I think when I was listening to you, as you kept singing, the more and more you got more and more confident, didn't you?
Once I get into singing, after a while, if I was doing a concert, probably after the first song, I'd probably get a bit better after the next song.
Yeah, you relax a bit, don't you, and then it's easier.
Yeah, and you've got to fight. You have to get into the mood as well, don't you?
Got to get into the moods. This is why a lot of artists, not suggesting you doing it, but a lot of artists turn to drugs to try and fake the moods. Don't turn to drugs, Nigel.
No. Okay, thanks very much.
All right, cheers, bye-bye.
Bye, Nigel.
Bye-bye, there we go, you see. He's great, isn't he? He's great.
He's really brave. Not many people would do that, would they?
Sometimes if he does it too loud, he has to do softer songs because his neighbours bang on the wall and tell him to shut up. If he's doing it during the show. 0344 499 1000. This is Talk Radio. Yeah. And we just, Narina just brought up when Chris came on the show. You may remember, dear listener, Chris came on just before Christmas. And he was a gentleman that we established pretty quickly had taken a massive overdose. And he had. And he was very, very ill. And it was touch and go. And, it was horrific from our perspective. Because there was a point. It went on for 30 minutes. There was a point for 6-7 minutes where he didn't say anything. And we thought he died. And I cannot say how upsetting and how... just how upsetting it was, thinking, I might be talking to someone who's not there anymore. I wish the police would hurry up. It's horrendous, you know.
Imagine what, 999 calls...
well, this is the
responders
thing.
Go
this
through.
Is, this is the thing. You know, some people very very kindly labelled us as heroes and said, no, it's not us, it's the coppers that turned up. It's the person you spoke to on the 999. It's the ambulance who deal with this every single day, multiple times a day, quite often. And we had, interestingly enough, I had a few 999 operators get in touch and say, I can have that 3, 4, 5, 6 times a day, that exact same call.
And this time of year especially. Yeah.
And we were, I mean, I burst into tears when the coppers turned up. We were exhausted from it, you know, just once. And these people are dealing with it all the time. The 999 operators, a proper...
incredible. I spoke to about 3 that night because we'd finished the conversation. They gave me a sort of a number to report it. And they said, if you get any more, give us a call. So I was ringing in stages, really, as we got more and more stuff. And they were just fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, calming me down to the point where I could target what I was saying. Because I'm kind of listening across and thinking, my God, this is awful. And we're responsible for this guy. That's what it felt like, wasn't it? All of a sudden, we were responsible.
And you
for
weren't
it.
Physically there either, which is hard.
Such a long way away.
Yeah.
But this is the joy of doing this show, right? Doing this slot is that, okay, that was a very, very extreme example. But the fact that we get people like Nigel who feel that, and Chris, who feel that they can kind of trust us. There's something magic about nighttime, which is why I think pop concerts happen at nighttime, why this is a great slot. There's something magical that happens. Yeah. There's a connection that you get that you couldn't get. You know, imagine a pop concert at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, that's great. Do you miss being the pop star? Because you were a pop star, weren't you, for a while?
About 2 minutes, and I didn't really like it
really?
At all. Yeah, I found it very odd.
Yeah.
And it was, for me, I think it was a thing of be careful what you wish for.
Right.
And I'm thinking back, when I think about what I wished for, all I remember is saying to my mum, I want to go on Top of the Pops. And once I got on Top of the Pops, I was like, well, done it now.
Top of the Pops is a bit tatty, isn't it? I've been to the studio. It's a little bit...
It was still Top of the Pops.
Yeah.
Yeah, for someone who's grown up watching sort of Kate Bush and stuff, you think that's the pinnacle.
What was the point when you realised that you'd made that transition from budding singer-songwriter in Narina at the piano to actually being, you know, kind of public property and a star?
Well, I never had that level of profile.
Right.
I had a moment, I think, around the Brit Awards and that sort of stuff. But I never felt comfortable with telly.
Mm.
And you have to feel comfortable with telly. And I would just find it, I mean, you've done telly a lot, right? It's a different world.
Yeah, completely.
It's a very different world from radio. And this is going to kill my telly, if I ever had a telly career. It's a bit fake, isn't it?
Oh, it's horrendous.
Yeah.
It's horrendous. And, you know, again, doing this kind of show, we can have you in for an hour and 40 minutes.
I was about to say, there's no depth to telly.
No.
Even, and I've done some supposedly in-depth things for telly, but you're still doing things in bite size and things have to be presentable in a certain way. And I just really struggle with it.
I'm sure you've done that kind of talking heads thing where they get you there to talk about an artist or a year or whatever. And you're there for an hour and a half and you sit and you talk and you've got all this wisdom. And then you watch it on the telly and they use about 30 seconds of you cut in between.
And the worst bits.
Yeah.
And you're left with the feeling of, oh, was I crap then?
Yeah.
Well, that other thing was, I don't know. I don't know what they want.
I had a kind of a TV career that ended really about 14 years ago. And then I got into radio. I was lucky enough to get into radio. And then I did I'm a Celebrity. And that kind of kicked off a second sort of TV career. And naively, I bought into all the bullshit again. I bought into all the people coming up going, oh, we think you're great. And we've got the project for you. We've got a great series for you that's going to work on Channel 4. And stupidly, I bought into it. All that excitement. Of course, I've not seen any of these people... Since, you know, these people that promise me great things, I've not seen any of them.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.
0344 499 1000.
Ollie says, Ian, if you are continually producing ejaculate, you may actually have an STD and it may be penile discharge you experience.
God.
Please get yourself checked for safety. OK, thanks. Thanks very much. And Ollie, may I just suggest that you perhaps go and get some Billy Connolly DVDs and get yourself checked for a sense of humour, you jerk. Let's go to Sally. Good evening, Sally.
Hello, sorry. I'm just taking a tablet. Sorry.
What is this? We've got fruity fags, we've got ecstasy takers. What the hell is
anyone straight listening to this show?
Wowzers.
No, just some citalopram, so I was gonna talk about the R. Kelly thing, but listening to Giselle on that, I've sort of slipped into old ways the last couple of weeks and it's getting me down a bit, so oh dear!
Oh dear! That's a very British thing. I'm feeling very suicidal, and I attempted to take my own life last night. Oh dear! Well, what shall I do? His step one is you've recognised it. I know easier said than done, but surely step two is going right. Well, I've recognised it. What can I do that can help shift things ever so slightly, even if it's just like offering some form of relief for 3 minutes a day. Well, what could you do for 3 minutes? Don't be mucky at the back. But what could you do for like 3 minutes that would just take you out of that feeling for a bit?
A little bit of light meditation, perhaps?
A little bit. Oh, yes. A little bit of the headspace. Come on. Hello?
Yeah, JFK, I think I might put a documentary on in a bit or something.
Well, yeah, watch A Brutal Murder. That
I think your obsession of watching a man having his head blown off by one lone gunman in a library,
no.
It's a book depository, means a library. I think your obsession with watching Lee Harvey Oswald murder John Fitzpatrick Kennedy, is that his name?
Fitzgerald,
yeah.
Fitzgerald.
I think your obsession with the murderer, Lee Harvey Oswald, who killed JFK, I think that is perhaps what's driving you bonkers.
No.
That's
No. I just enjoy it. I don't know why. It's just a thing.
I know why.
Why?
Because you enjoy the studious element of it and the feeling that maybe you could see something that other people are missing.
No.
She's not said that yet.
No.
I just find it interesting. I don't understand.
She's not agreeing with what you're saying. Don't try and claim this as a victory.
I know that Sally enjoys having a bit of expertise.
I just don't understand how people don't see what I see, anyway. But
Lee Harvey Oswald shot JFK.
No,
and then Lee Harvey Oswald was there. Yes, he did, mate. Well, he was down in Cuba.
No, he didn't, mate.
He was down in Cuba.
What are you talking about? No, he wasn't down in Cuba. He tried to get into Cuba.
What was the meeting he had with the Russian? Was that in Mexico?
That was in Mexico.
Thank you.
And that doesn't
thank you.
You racist. Mexicans are not Cubans.
Thank you. Shut up, Sally. I'm telling Captain what happened in JFK. Right. He went to... He was a communist anarchist.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they painted him, isn't it, Sally?
Excuse me.
Yeah, that is, yeah.
He was a communist anarchist, and then good old American Jack Ruby wasn't gonna wait for the legal system. He's like, I've had enough of this.
What, Jack Ruby, he used to work for Al Capone.
Yeah, that gangster.
Good down-to-earth American. Well, he didn't pay his taxes. But anyway, so Jack Ruby, just an honest, hard-working nightclub guy, was furious that his president had been brutally murdered by this one man. You could call it, I guess, think of a phrase of one shooter. Lone gunman. And he took it upon himself to speed up the American justice system, which we know is painfully slow. And Jack Ruby... did the work, saved millions of dollars, and saved the work of the American legal system and took that guy out.
Okay.
And then, as we know, Jack Ruby loved pasties.
Oh, if only Sally had known this years ago, she could have saved her time.
Should have asked.
I bought a book. A couple of months ago. 28 quid it cost me for 100 pages. I mean, I could have
wasted money.
Saved. I know. But, But anyway, going back to, I haven't been out of the house in ages,
uh-oh.
So
yeah, it's getting that bad, so. And I've got a woman coming over on Friday, and I really don't want her to, and I just want to be left alone.
What's she coming over for? Who is she? Who's this woman?
Oh, she's, my son is autistic.
Yeah.
So she's coming round to talk to me about his transport requirements and things like that, and it's like, oh, it needs to be done, but I don't want people in my house at the moment.
Yeah.
I don't like it. It's,
can you not do it over the phone or on Skype or something?
No, she's got to meet Jack.
Right,
and,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so.
But can you compare that? You compare that for the boy, can't you? I could do superhuman things for my kids when I was feeling, you know, lousy.
Yeah, of course. But when you're sort of down and depressed and all that, one of the things that happens to me is I don't keep on top of the housework.
Yeah.
So now I'm panicking because I've got all this stuff to do. And, and I'm just thinking, oh, God. And
is there anyone you can ask to come and help?
No, I'll do it. I like cleaning. I enjoy cleaning. Yeah. But, it's just a bit of a pain, and I just, you know, I want to get out of the house, and I can't get out of the house.
It's making yourself start, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah. And, I haven't been out for a while, and I'm desperate to get out, and I don't want to be in the house, and, yeah, it's just a bit of a pain, and I'm just thinking a bit.
Yeah.
Have you got, and this may be a stupid suggestion, but I'll say it because, you know, why not? Have you got a pair of headphones?
Yeah, I've got headphones.
Well, why don't you put a good podcast on or something, or some music?
Yeah.
Put your headphones on, just walk to the end of the street and back.
Oh, that fills me with dread.
But if you've got your headphones on, that's comfortable, isn't it?
Yeah, it's my thing is that I get really worried about the possibilities of things that are going to happen.
Yeah.
And bumping into people who I haven't seen in a while, or what if this happens? Like the first time I took my daughter to school in ages, a few years back, I fell over in the street.
Oh.
And right in front of a bus stop of teenagers. And so that was something I didn't think. I thought to myself, "Oh, I didn't plan for this. How do I deal with this?" So then I didn't go out for a while. So that's my thing. It's not wanting to not go out. It's just planning things.
Yeah, but you know you can't plan for everything. You know that.
I know.
But I know what it is. It's your attempt at controlling something that's uncontrollable.
Yeah.
Could you... all right, let's forget the end of the street. Back garden and to the back wall and back.
Yeah, I mean, I can do it. It's just getting myself...
Yeah.
To do it.
Well, maybe that's here's a little plan
needs,
tomorrow, then.
You need to dive in. Strip off.
What?
Run up and down the street.
Yeah, no one's expecting that.
Yeah, here we go. This is my cue. I've been thinking about it.
Everyone will pretend they can't see you.
Yeah, run up and down the street screaming like a lunatic, like the nuts people we are. And then come back in and feel invigorated, feel full of life, feel on top of the world.
Get arrested.
And, mate, you may get arrested. That's an issue that we'll deal with at a later date. And I think it will cure you. I think you'll be cured.
Yeah, you think so?
I don't know. It's hard work, isn't it? Navigating stuff that a lot of people find really simple, but navigating could be so difficult.
And I'm going to tell you something else that you already know, but it doesn't feel that way. No one gives a toss about you walking down the street.
I know. Yeah. I know.
Because everyone's thinking about their own stuff.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. Sometimes you can walk down the street and you're so aware of yourself, even walking feels weird.
Yeah, I'm a bit like you. I fall over quite a lot.
Oh, my God. All the time. I can fall over from a standing start.
Yeah.
But...
yeah, my feet just go wobbly and, I'm over.
It breaks the ice. And do you know what? People tend to feel sorry for you.
Oh, dear. But, I've just had a really weird weekend. A family member got in touch and it was just really odd and strange. And within, 5 minutes, she blocked me. And I'm like, what?
Okay.
Well, that's odd.
So, yeah.
But that's her stuff, not yours. You know that.
Yeah, yeah, I know. But, yeah, so there you go.
So, in summary, what I'm saying is the mantra needs to be bollocks to him.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Hey!
It does, though. It does. Just keep repeating that. And you'd be amazed. Maybe it'd make a difference. I don't know.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation. The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Maybe I'm enriching your life. Good evening, dear listener. Hi, welcome to the show. 0344-499-1000 is the telephone number. Here's my advice. I don't want to say it in front of her. Right, go on to Amazon, go and treat yourself to some Nerina Palo albums, because here's the thing, the earlier stuff you can get for pennies. You can get for literally pennies.
Fires, Year of the Wolf.
Oh, those are the two. Those are the two. Those are the two. Fires and Year of the Wolf.
Lucky was brilliant as well.
Year of the Wolf is kind of... yeah, you're right, you're absolutely right, but Year of the Wolf is kind of like a sort of nod to sort of 60s girl groups produced by Bernard Butler. Fires is just like, oh, jeez. Oh, God, could these songs and could that voice get any more perfect? You know, it's just... But all of her albums are great, great, great. Honestly, I wouldn't do the hard sell in front of her because she was embarrassed when we played one of her songs. Of course, because she's a good, humble human being. But seriously, go on Amazon. You can buy them for pennies and it will enrich your life. I got turned on to her by Clive Bull. I think I've told this before. When I was at LBC, Clive Bull kept banging on about this album. It just kept going on about this album to the point where I thought, oh, do you know what? I'm going to have to get this and have a listen to it. And it was Nerina, and it was stunning. Blew me away. She is brilliant. And the fact that she kind of got in touch with us and said, I'm not plugging anything, but could I come on the show? She's painted me a picture.
Here's how I discovered her. Yeah. My first job in radio was in a commercial radio station in Peterborough, and there was a box of CDs. You know, you used to get sent actual CDs.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what the DJs used to play. And it was one of the great joys of working at that place that, you know, once they'd sort of come in and gone through them, you used to get multiple copies. You could take them home.
Yeah.
And I found hers, and I was just like, this looks like my sort of thing. And boy, was it. It was great.
That's how I got into Imani when I was doing FM 103 Horizon. Milton Keynes Horizon, home of the hits. And they had a room that when the boss was not in the building, you could kind of, you weren't allowed to, but you could go in the room, and as long as you didn't take too many, you could just take a few CDs. And I saw the Imani CD. I went, oh, this looks interesting. Boom, one of the best steals ever done in my life. And a couple of people on the Facebook page going, who are these guests Ian's had in? We've not heard. Here's the thing, right? But why don't you just trust us with the guests? Just trust us with the guests. We only get people in that we know are brilliant. That's the whole philosophy of the show. We only get people in that we know are brilliant, that either are big stars, in the case of Nerina, or... they should be big stars, but for some reason the stars haven't aligned, something hasn't happened, but you should definitely check them out.
They're always hugely talented, right?
Yeah.
And they're always worth a bit of time just to have a look.
We never get filler guests. Never.
No.
Never get... I did it once when I was at Absolute, years ago. We were given this American comedian who we were told was big and was great, and he wasn't. He was a dick and he was rude and he was on his phone the whole time. And I was with Eloise, and I just said to her, I ain't never going to get a guest in just because they've been offered to us. I'm only going to get people in that we like. And we get people that we love, and we get people that we know are going to enrich your lives if you're prepared to go and do a little bit of digging after they've been in. That's all you got to do. We give them to you. You just got to go and do a little bit of work. Go on to Amazon. Go and buy a couple of Nerina's albums for pennies. And thank us later. Thank us later. I'm going to sneeze.
Good evening.
Shut up. Oh,
gosh. Bless you.
I told you. You didn't believe me. You didn't think I was going to sneeze. And I sneezed. I proved you wrong in a game, Barney. It's a game. Blah, 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 blah. Good evening, Manny.
Hey, Manny.
Good evening. How are you?
That's none of your business.
I think she had a beautiful voice, didn't she?
Yeah, oh, she's great, man. Honestly, she's some singer, some songwriter, some pianist. She's the whole package, you know. She's brilliant. Absolutely very, brilliant.
Very polite. Humble.
She was very polite, and you don't get that enough in pop stars these days and singers.
No, no, no,
manners. Manners maketh the manny, as we've established.
Think the fingers up to you, don't I?
Yeah. The what? Huh? I'm wearing new trousers today.
Very nice.
And a new shirt.
I had to change my tight before I came into work.
Dirty.
Yeah, do you know why? I went round to Ian's, and no, not that. I was playing with his kittens, and they were slashing at my legs.
Kittens.
I was playing with his kittens, and that is not a
euphemism. Don't say kittens as though that's a rude word. There's nothing. Kittens could not mean anything sexual unless you are the highest of high perverts.
And yet, puppies do.
Puppies, yeah, 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 they do, don't they? Okay, here we go. Hang on a minute, man. You got a phone. Shut up. We've got a phone in, right? Animals that are rude. Rude. Oh, this is great. Anna, give me a pen.
Give me a pen. Where's the pen?
Here.
Yeah, thank you. Jeez.
Animals.
Animal euphemisms.
That are rude is better. Animals that are rude is better.
Okay, if you say so.
I tell you what, get a bit of paper. We'll do two phone-ins and see which is the most popular. 03444991000. My phone-in, animals that are rude, for example, puppies.
Beaver.
Thank you. And Catherine's?
Animal euphemisms. That's the same thing, but in two words rather than how many?
03444991000. You phone up and you say, I want to do animals that are rude or animal euphemisms, and we'll see who gets the biggest list.
We'll see who's read more books.
Okay. Yes, Manny, what can we do? You, every time you come on, we have an argument, Manny.
you know when you was in the jungle, who have you kept in touch with?
I've kept in touch with Jenny from Coronation Street, plays Fizz. I've kept in touch with her husband a lot, actually. I text her husband, Chris, a lot, because he's a nice man. But I think they're coming down to London at some point in February, and I think we're going to meet up for a little drinky booth. And I keep in touch with Shappy. I saw Shappy maybe 6 weeks ago, and I text her from time to time. Kez, I text infrequently, and that's it. Everyone else can go and take a running leap.
What's his name? Was pretty friendly with you, wasn't he? Amir Khan.
I was friendly until I found out he was a backstabbing thicko.
You should know that about. I'm
going to
say nothing.
Yeah, I found out he's a backstabbing thicko. And also, he was actually quite mean to me in there, to my face. He's one of those kids.
He's a glass chin, isn't he?
Sorry?
He's got a glass chin.
He's got a glass chin, apparently. So he's one of those kids who, just when they get bored, they just start picking on the weak one in the group.
Well, the way I saw it was, he's one of those kids who goes with the path of least resistance, whatever's easiest for him, right? So he went along with the...
he's lucky I didn't punch him.
He went along with the other blokes because he thought that they were the winners, right?
He was incorrect.
But actually, incorrect data.
I was the winner.
And when he was niggling at you, it was to try and win favour with them to show that he was on their
basically,
side.
I could have beaten all those men up in there. And I didn't. They didn't show it. They had to cut it out for legal reasons.
You could have blown on his chin and he would have been knocked out.
Okay. I get the boxing.
A
phone call from Florida. It's not Amir Khan, is it?
Doubt it.
Is he with his wife at the moment or have they split up again? I mean, that's back and forth and forth.
They can split up and they can get together in a couple of minutes.
I apologise. That was blown up. Manny, is there a point to this call or do you just want to reminisce about my fabulous career?
I just wanted to say about that young lady. You know, she was nice and humble, beautiful voice.
Yeah, she's a great voice. Go and buy a CD of hers.
I will tell my kids to sort of get it out.
All right. Thanks, Manny. Bye.
Bye.
I'll tell you in a bit.
Oh.
I had a good cry today. Do you know why? Not a good cry, a little weep. Right. And do you know why I had a little weep? I've got a new album. Right. It's not the greatest album, actually, that this act has ever done. But a little weep at the new Divine Comedy live album. And do you know why I wept? I was grateful. I was grateful that I'm alive while Neil Hannon is still doing concerts and making records. I was grateful because they're flipping ace of the Divine Comedy. Neil Hannon is out of this world. And it's quite a nice live album. But I was just... A little tear rolled down my cheek because I was grateful for the Divine Comedy because they're brilliant. Neil Hannon is brilliant. I think one of the shows... I think the show that we saw in Manchester is represented on this. It's live in Europe, but I think one of the Manchester shows is...
That was one of the best gigs, best venues I've ever been to.
It was great. Yeah, it was great. I, anyway, I'm grateful that Neil Hannon exists. Love you, Neil. Thank you for the music. Good evening, Will.
Hello. Animals.
Now, animals that are rude or whatever Kath's was.
Animal euphemisms.
I don't understand the difference.
No, you just got to
pick
one.
There isn't a difference.
Which one would you like to do? Animals that are rude or whatever Kath's was?
Don't make me choose, guys. I don't want to be put in the middle of your...
Do you love best, no, mummy or daddy?
Catherine, that's not the game.
It totally is.
And that is out of order. That is not the game. The game is, which is the best phone in?
If we both call Will, who does he run to?
Animals. All right, Will.
Will.
Come on, Will.
Come on, Will.
Come on, Will.
Okay. Cat's won.
Yes!
Oh, I feel terrible.
Have a biscuit.
We seem to have lost him there. I'm not quite sure.
Oh, that's tight.
No, I'm not sure. It wasn't my fault. It was a technical thing. I don't know what happened. Valerie, in Florida, United States of America. Stay there, because we have to go to the news, because this country's falling apart. And sorry, well, I don't know what happened there. It wasn't our fault. I think your phone battery probably
died. You're such
a
bad loser.
Not at all. Not at all, mate. Oh. Not at all. But when we come back from the news, we're going to go to Florida. We're going to speak to Valerie. It's going to be awesome. What's this? Ian, I must apologise for my text the other night. I was trying to be witty about your taste in music. Okay, Jamie, I've no idea what that refers to, but thanks so much indeed. It's appreciated. Apologies are always appreciated. Phone up and say you're sorry for stuff, guys. Let's be big about it. 0344 499 1000 is the telephone number. If you want to give us a call, the Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee and Catherine Boyle, some weeknights from 10.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Divine Comedy, how could... Honestly, a tear came down my cheek today as I just thought, God bless the Divine Comedy. God bless Neil Hannon. Aren't we lucky to live in a world where he is still pumping out records and still doing tours? You ever get the chance, go and see him live, man. Loose Cannon, it's called. It's a pun.
Oh.
Isn't it? Canon.
Because canon
is
like the collection of work.
There you go, you see. Well done. 0344.
Thanks. I live for your approval.
I could tell you things, but I think it's better for you.
That I already know most of them, yeah.
If you work them out, you're... Okay.
Didn't need to work it out.
0344 499 1000 is the telephone number. We call you back, which is important, because it means you can call us from anywhere in the world, which is what Valerie has done. Good evening, Valerie.
Good evening. How are you this evening?
Valerie, I'm on top of the world. You're in Florida, are you?
Yes, sir, I am. I just wanted to give you guys a big old wave your way, and I wanted to say hello to my husband, John. You've spoken with him before about his book he had published, The King of Poetry from the Ancient Shores of Ireland.
Now, Valerie, hang on a second, because you're breaking up ever so slightly, and I want to get this. We read extracts from your husband's book, didn't we?
Yes, you purchased it and you guys discussed it. You read part of it, and he wanted to let you know he has another book coming up in a few months, ready to be published, and it's called The Chronicles of the Wizard of Avalon. And when it's ready, he would love to give you a call,
dude. The Chronicles of Avalon. The Chronicles of the Wizard of Avalon, because the line isn't the greatest thing. Valerie, this is fantastic. I remember this. We found this, and he am I right that he publishes these himself online?
Yes, he uses a company called Page Publishing, and they're in Staten Island, New York.
Yeah.
And this is his second one. And he thought it was great to discuss it with you and let everybody know about it.
Man alive. Okay, well, this is great. We love this. I remember I bought this book online, and we read some extracts from it, and we spoke to your husband, and it was a joy. And we on this show, Valerie, we celebrate creativity, and we have big stars on, and we have small people on that haven't been discovered yet, but still have something to say, because we know how difficult it can be for your voice to be heard. When is the new book coming out, Valerie?
Probably within the next 3 to 6 months. So as soon as it's available, he'll give you a call, and he'll let you know. It'll be on all the same websites as the other one, Kindle.com, all that.
I'm gonna pray, Valerie, that before that happens, either you get a new phone or we get a phone line that works, because we can hear you, but it's not the greatest. But yeah, listen, when the book comes out, get him to get in touch. Here's my guarantee. I'm buying a copy of your husband's book because I bought the last one, and I'm more than happy to send a few dollars your way. So next time, when it comes out, Valerie, give us a call. We will order that. We will pay for the book live on the show, and we'll have a chat about it, and maybe we'll read some bits out and see if we can sell you a few copies. How about that?
That would be wonderful. And you all have a wonderful day. Well, actually, evening on your end.
Yeah. Have a happy New Year.
What's the old man complaining about now? What's he moaning about? Listen, Valerie, I'm talking to you. I'm not talking to that loser.
I think he was wishing you a happy New Year.
Oh,
so be gracious.
Oh, in that case, a happy New Year to you, sir. Hey, listen, it's so nice to talk to you, Valerie. Thank you, and we will speak to you both very, very soon.
Okay.
Well, wonderful. Thank you very much, and take care, everybody.
I hope you had a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Have you been drinking?
Not yet.
Well, get a few down, you. It sounds like you need it. And the same to you, my friends, and we will speak very, very soon. Thank you so much for the call.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
OK, let's crack on with the show. So at 11 o'clock, we've got Tamara Simmons, who's the executive producer of what I think is the most important TV show of this century, I would say, so far. I can't think of one that's been, not just because about the specific subject of R. Kelly, but also about the treatment of black women, the abuse of women in general, and the ability. We've learnt nothing after Savile. We've learned nothing.
The other interesting thing is, and it's something that keeps coming up, particularly on this show, because I know that it's an area that we're interested in, but the complicity of the pop industry.
There we go.
In protecting some people over others.
So we're talking to Tamara at 11 o'clock, and I cannot wait. Let's go to these calls we've been waiting for ages. Good evening, Philip.
Hey, Ian. Hi, Catherine.
Hiya, you're Philip.
Right? It's none of your business. What have you got for us, Phil?
I'd just like to plug you for saving lives. You and me?
Go on.
Yeah, because how can I put it?
Go on. Put it straight in.
We help me out a lot.
Have you been struggling a bit? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
Really? I'm sorry to hear that, brother. That sucks.
I'm coming out of the good end, though. You know what I mean?
Things are on the up.
I've been listening to you since August. Last year.
Yeah.
And when I got that, that call, Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
And I phoned up next day. Thank you. Just keep up the good work, mate.
Well, thank you, Philip, and we both appreciate that. That is wonderful. But you're definitely on the upswing, are you? Think you're heading towards the light?
Yeah.
Beautiful. What? Without going into detail, was there anything that changed? Did you do something that helped you turn that corner, or was it just one of those things?
No, there was a lot. I had a lot of things on my plate.
Yeah.
And I couldn't cope at once.
So did you push some of the things off the plate?
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. That's what I'm learning. Push some of those things off the plate. Clear some space on the plate.
Yeah, you've got to clear your head, haven't you?
You have to. To
get the other information in. And then it works.
Well, Philip, thank you so much for your call.
I'm so,
you know, me and Kath, honestly, are humbled that listening to this rubbish, two idiots talking rubbish, that's all the show is. That's what it should be called. We're steady on. No, don't be so hard on yourself, Catherine. But the fact that people listening to this and it kind of helps them through a little bit of darkness, then that makes my day and that makes it worthwhile, Philip. So thank you for sharing that, mate.
It's okay. What about Isaiah Kelly? Is he going to get fined or what?
Well, I hope he's going to go to prison. You listen after 11. I nearly made light of it then by saying he's a very naughty man. He's not. He's a sex criminal and he's an abuser of women and it's horrendous. So hopefully, one of the questions we're going to ask Tamara Simmons, the executive producer, is why is he not in prison? Because I just can't understand it.
Why aren't you coming up in papers, though?
Say that again.
Why aren't you coming up in newspapers?
Why what?
Why aren't you coming up in newspapers? It's bad.
Well, he is bad. He's very bad. You want to watch the series, Philip. Go and watch the series, Surviving R. Kelly. It's a shocker. Thank you for your call. Let's go to Alan Caddick.
Hi, boss. Hi, Cap.
Where are you?
I'm in the bedroom.
Where's your phone?
I'm on my mobile.
Are you on your own mobile, or are you talking into a mobile that you're...
Are you on one of those mobiles that goes around a baby's cock? Because this ain't a phone that you're using.
Oh.
Oh, there he is.
Hello?
Can we on loudspeaker?
Oh, Alan.
You talk to him.
Have you learnt nothing?
I can't deal with this.
What's going on, Alan?
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you perfectly well. Before, it sounded like you were in one room and your phone was down the hall.
There's someone with smartphones.
Yeah.
And smartphones are not so smart callers.
Oh, come on. Alan Caddick, unload yourself.
I was reading an interesting story in the Daily Mail about someone who had a stroke.
All right, Alan, thanks so much. You keep that vibe. We'll get a new one for tomorrow's show. I really appreciate that. Flipping heck. Good evening, Dion.
Good evening, Ian.
We'll get another vibe tomorrow. Remind me to bring some vibe in tomorrow. We'll just coast tonight. I mean, tomorrow I'll bring double vibe. Just in case
anyway,
someone sucks it all.
Good Ian.
Good Ian.
Yeah, I thought I'd listen to the whole show tonight. I'm fed up with all the other stations.
Yes, they suck. Stop listening to BBC London. It sucks.
Brexit and this and that.
Yeah.
And, you know, PC correctness and everything. That's why I'm listening.
Because this show, you're saying this show is not politically correct? Here we go. Here's a question. What is political correctness?
I don't know.
Because you said it, so I thought you might know.
I don't know.
You said it.
Just, I'm trying to say something straight now, which would be...
Can't say straight.
Rather than calling someone obese, I'd rather say, well, you're fat.
Okay, well, you can say that.
I think I should be able to say
it. No, you can't say it. Why can't you say it? And why does political correctness stop you saying it?
Because the BBC don't like you saying it.
Oh,
the BBC on your shoulder all the time, then?
Not really, no, I don't really.
Well, here's the thing. Now... You can say it, but they may not like you saying it. You can say it to me, but I may not like you saying it. But no one's stopping you saying it. But you have to accept that with certain words, there comes there's great responsibility. With certain words, you can say stuff. You can come on here and slag off Christians and slag off Muslims if you want. But if you do it in a way that is offensive, then I will step in and pick you up. Now, that's not political correctness. That's manners.
I don't like upsetting people. I'm quite nice. I'm okay.
Well, then, if you know that... And fat's an odd one, right? But if you... Let's stick with it, because that's the one you used. If you know that the word fat upsets some people, and you're a nice bloke... Then why would you want to say fat?
I wouldn't. I would say you're on the large side.
But you just said, but your whole, I know these arguments are kind of pointless with you, but you said that your whole argument was that you want to say fat, but you can't.
I was trying to think of something, it's just that these days I can't say anything.
Yes, you can. We've literally just proven that you can. You can't say anything, but with a lot of language, there will be consequences.
I know, so you have to be careful what you're saying.
Weren't you careful before?
Yeah, I don't like to upset people.
Well, but problem then.
But the BBC doesn't necessarily... Anyway,
I just said it as an example.
Okay. Anyway, well, you're through to the politically incorrect...
I know.
I'm a big fan of political correctness.
You're one of our books with singers and that.
Sorry?
I ordered a book yesterday.
Books with fingers?
Chris Difford.
What's that got to do with fingers?
Chris Difford.
You said books with fingers?
We did, yeah.
Squeeze.
Okay, I'm tripping.
Just saying words now.
The Chris Difford book, Some Fantastic Place. Great book.
That's it. I've ordered it yesterday.
Good. It's a great book. You'll love it. Read it.
Yeah, I know. I've heard so many people have said, and I love Squeeze. I grew up with them.
Oh, did you? Did you go to school with them?
No, I was sort of 70s. I saw them in a few pubs in North London.
Oh,
Yeah, it was my era. I'm 60.
So you can't say squeeze anymore, can you, because of the Me Too campaign? That's true. It's political correctness gone mad.
Can you repeat that, please?
Yeah.
I can't say squeeze.
You're not allowed to say squeeze anymore because of the Me Too campaign and political correctness gone mad.
Oh, you're having a laugh.
No, I'm not. That's true. You can't say squeeze. Sexist. Sexual harassment, isn't it?
I was listening to your station earlier today.
Oh, yeah.
It's nothing to do with us.
They were on about the new Gillette advert, the Me Too.
Yeah, it's good, that, isn't it?
I don't know. I don't use Gillette.
Well, it's only bad for rapists.
Huh? Sorry, what?
Just don't be...
That escalated quickly.
No, but that's what they're saying. Don't be a dick.
Here's the thing, right? Gillette, as we all know, is the best that a man can get.
Yes.
We know that. So let's just go and buy it. Thank you, Dan.
Take a trip into the alternate reality of Late Night Radio.
I think I'm in something like The Matrix, and so are you.
The Late Night Alternative.
Hello.
With Ian Lee.
Is there anybody out there?
On Talk Radio.
Hello.
Of course, when Alistair... I got some new... Two new sound effects, and when Alistair swore at me earlier on, what I should have played was... Oh, why is it not working? Is my computer on? There we go. Okay, this is what I should have played.
Language, Timothy.
Say something silly. Go on. Well, you normally do it all the time.
I'm just thinking of something specifically silly.
Because I've got a great one for you. This is a great little clip.
A biddly biddly bong.
Catherine, you're such a twat.
Right, young man. Bed.
That's my baby that turns 7 on Sunday.
What have you done? I'm calling the soch.
Language, Timothy.
Doesn't he sound grown up? He's gone. This is the progression of... Here it goes. So this is him.
Ooga zaga, 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 ooga zaga.
That was then, this is now.
Catherine, you're such a twat.
It's a good one, isn't it? What's in the stairs?
I hope he was saying twit. Was he? Or did you get... Wow, have you weaponised that kid?
You know some of the bootleg recordings I've made of my children that I've sent to you?
Yeah, but now it's been aimed in my direction. I don't like it.
You can have it, Sam. I'll send you the MP3. He wants it as his text alert. Hey, someone, Dan, friend of the show, Dan, who lives in the United States of America, and Julie and Dave, we're coming to you in a minute, I promise, once said he would pay to have all of these soundboard clips.
Shaggy pony.
You're a pervert.
You want me to do it for you, rub it in?
I'm David Babcock and I got my willy stuck in a Hoover.
I don't want to sell them, but if someone can tell me an easy way of, like, making an online soundboard and uploading these so that you can play with them at home or use them as ringtones or, you know, text alerts or whatever, I'm more than happy to do that. I'm more than happy to give that stuff away and put it out there. But I don't know how. So I don't know if there's anyone that could build an app for us, like a free app, or if someone could tell me a way of just somewhere that I could give it to you, but without actually me having to do any work. I'd be up for that. I am totally up.
He's definitely up for no work.
I'm up for sharing this.
Aren't your balls normally held back by your willy?
I'm up for sharing the great philosophies of this show.
No one answered my question.
Someone, I'll show you in a bit. Someone can help with that. That would be awesome. Now this is turning to. I think we need to start more shows with an angry rebuttal aimed at 80% of our listeners. We need to violently
eject them.
Eject our listeners at the start of the show because this is a great show. No one's listening because they've all turned off because we told them to. But it's a great show. Good evening, Julie.
Good evening. I'm phoning you because I've watched the Surviving R. Kelly series. I watched it a couple of weeks ago when it first came out.
Yeah, what do you reckon?
It was one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen. I watched it with my daughter, who's 20.
Yeah.
And it just played on our minds so much. And I cannot understand how him and all the people around him are not in prison.
Well, here's the thing, and Kath mentioned this earlier, you're right, the people around him are complicit. There's like he's only in, I think, the first two or three episodes. He's sort of tour manager and road manager and assistant. It took me like episode two to suddenly go, no, hang on, you were there. You were actually there helping get these girls. You're as involved as he is.
And also, someone's keeping them in those rooms and it's not just him. They're frightened to use the phone. You know, it can't be just him.
Of course it's not just him. And even that guy who was boasting that he'd forged, Leah, her name? Forged her age on the marriage certificate.
That's the guy I was talking about, yeah.
How can they get away with it?
Well, and this is the thing, and then we've got Tamara Simmons coming on, who's the exec producer of it. This is the overriding question: is I do not understand how he is not in prison. Now, maybe obviously the whole sex videotape thing, he managed to get away with that. Okay,
yeah,
and maybe it's as simple as no one else has pressed charges against him since. Maybe it's as simple as that. I don't know. Go on, Kathy, you're going to say something.
He manages, you know, money, I think money talks, and also he has power still, even though financially he's not what he was, and actually now people are shutting him down on the radio and stuff. But there are enough hangers-on whose livelihoods depend on it that he gets backed up, whatever he says.
And he must have the police in his pocket, I would
Well,
think.
Did you notice, it was episode 5 or 6... There was an interesting point where they just almost as a throwaway comment, the narration said he was tipped off about this by his friends in, I think, the Illinois Police Department. Okay. So, I, and that was one of the things. That's how Saville got away with it, Julie, is because he was friends with all the police.
It only takes one.
Yeah. He would have the police round to his for card games, and he would buy them stuff, and he would go, you know. So he has to have some of the police in his pocket. He has to.
Also, people are still really impressed by him, aren't they? People don't want to believe that it's happening. There were women outside that courtroom. There were women outside his concerts who were saying, I don't believe, you know, they didn't believe other women. I don't believe it. This isn't him. They're just trying to bring him down because he's a strong, powerful black man. And so the world's against him. And so they, you know, they chose their own version of what happened, despite the fact that all these women are talking about the same thing.
I don't understand how anybody could not believe those women on those that had been filmed. I mean, there's no way they're lying about that.
Well, I wonder if this... I know there was a thing on BBC Three, R. Kelly's Sex Lives and Videotape, or Sex Lives, Sex Girls and Videotapes, which I didn't watch. It's on BBC Three, which is kind of a... Okay, again, it's not a mainstream channel really. So maybe this documentary is the first time that all of these girls, women, have told their stories together. You know, if one girl comes forward, this argument doesn't hold much water. So, you know, one girl comes forward, she's lying. A year later, another girl kind of pops up in a small little story in the paper. That don't believe. But when you've got woman after woman after woman after woman and parent
and his ex-wife and his children and
stuff like that, when you've got them just bang, 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 all together, all cut together, then you have to believe it. You have to believe it when you see it like that.
But surely they're going to do something now.
Well,
this has come out.
I've seen a few stories in the online press in this country of things that are sort of trickling through, like the woman who says that he gave her herpes. And, you know, so...
But here's the thing
as
well.
That's what they're going for, those bits.
In America, more so than here, money can buy you freedom.
You get a different kind of justice.
You look at OJ, you look at Michael Jackson, and also that first court case about the urinating on a 14-year-old girl. That got delayed for 6 years because he had excellent lawyers that could delay it for 6 years. Suddenly you got a 6-year-old case. She's not 14, she's 20. The excitement and the Ferrari has died down. So he gets another case, he can delay it for years and years. Money can buy you freedom in America. The whole justice system is bent over there.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Evening, dear listener. It's Ian Lee, and you are...
Catherine Boyle.
Welcome. Stay off the phones for a little bit, because we've got a guest coming up. We've talked about this show a lot the last couple of weeks, because I'd heard about it, and I'd read bits and pieces about it, and I thought, well, it can't be as bad as everyone's saying. It can't be. And it was, I'm talking about, of course, about Surviving R. Kelly, the show that we've watched online. It's going to be screened legitimately in the UK soon, starting on February the 5th on the Crime and Investigation Channel. It should be, I think it should be on like BBC One or something. To me, it is the most, excuse me, I think it's the most important TV show of the last 15 years. It's an incredible story of abuse of power, of abuse of fame, of abuse of women. It's horrendous. I do not understand why this is not the biggest story. I was going to say showbiz story, but you know what I mean. I don't understand why this is not the biggest story at the moment. And it's an incredible series. Some of you might find it triggering. It's very upsetting. It's very graphic in its description. I think it's really, really important. I'm so thrilled. We've got the executive producer. We've got Tamra Simmons on the line from America. Good evening, Tamra.
Good evening. How are you going?
We're really good. We're really sorry that we called you up an hour early.
That's totally my fault. I was too eager.
No, it's better to be early than late.
That's what we thought. Hey, listen, congratulations on the series Surviving R. Kelly. I know it's a weird thing to say, considering the subject matter.
Right?
But we watched it. We've seen all six episodes. Honestly, I think it's the most important TV series of the last 15 years. How did you get involved? How did you end up working on this, Tamra?
Well, thank you guys for the support and everything, and being able to speak on your platform today regarding it. So about August of 2017...
Tamra, sorry to interrupt. Ever so slightly, we've just lost you ever so slightly. I don't know if you've moved.
Oh, if you, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you there. That's so it. Sorry. Don't move. Sorry, go on. Okay. Carry on. Go on.
So one of my producing partners, Jesse Daniels, we were looking at some articles, and we were just like, you know, these new allegations against R. Kelly, which we were familiar with the allegations about 10 years ago, but we didn't know that there was going to be these new surfacing articles that were going to come about. And so we just, you know, we saw the family that was there in the news, and I reached out to them, and I just wanted to hear more about their story, their fight to find their daughter or hear from their daughter. And from there, we were introduced to other survivors who also had been in contact with the family and confided in them regarding their situation with R. Kelly as well.
So there's a whole community has built up around amongst the women who have been victims of R. Kelly. Then there's support amongst the survivors.
Yeah, it's almost like you talk to one person and then you realize that there's another person that was in the same situation. So then you become like this sisterhood.
Yeah.
And then you try to heal each other and say, you know, they share stories. And then there's some survivors who didn't meet until our New York screening. So they didn't even know some of the other survivor stories until they met recently in December when we were in New York. And then some of them didn't even know their story until it actually aired on the documentary.
It's horrific. It's horrific. Let me put it in context from my point of view. I was aware of the sex tape allegation, and that demeans what it is. You know, it's video footage of R. Kelly paying and sexually abusing and urinating on a 14-year-old girl. And I was aware of that when it happened. And then that story kind of went out. I don't know about you, Catherine. It kind of went out of my focus, and I thought that that had been resolved legally. I don't really know what that means by that. But I thought that was that. Maybe they proved it wasn't him.
His career continued, and it seemed like he hadn't been harmed by it at all. So, you know, over here you can be forgiven for thinking, oh, well, then that's that then. But watching your documentary, it turns out that, I mean, he managed to use the kind of it wasn't me defence and get away with it, even though there are people who know the girl in question who say, that is my friend, that is my family member. I mean, it's just we just can't work out why this guy's not in prison.
Well, that's the question, Tamra. Why is he not in prison?
Well, I think, as you can see in the documentary, one of the jurors had stated regarding why these women couldn't be trusted.
Yeah.
And it was basically off the exterior of their person. So they said, oh, you have those kind of clothes on, you have those kind of shoes on, you look like that, we don't believe you. There's no way that this man with so much money, power, and fame could do anything like that to someone like you.
And one of the big things, I was reading this on Twitter, and it does get mentioned, I think, in episode 5 or 6 of the show, is that it's because they're black girls. It's because they were black girls. Now, if he were locking up, holding prisoner, having sex with white girls of 14, 15, 16, then the police would kind of swoop down on him, and this would be a huge thing. Because it's black girls, it's kind of doesn't matter so much. Do you buy that theory, Tamara?
Well, you have, you know, campaigns like Me Too Movement and Color for Change. That is the reason why those organizations are in existence today, to kind of help, you know, put a barrier. Not to help put a barrier, but to destroy the barrier where the black girls' voices don't matter. So I do believe that race has been a factor in the past. And we do believe that if these women were of a different race, that there may be a different outcome today. Maybe 10 years ago, if it was a different woman, these women would not be in the situation that they're in currently today.
There was also the suggestion, Tamara, in the documentary that, you know, elements of the black community actually were complicit because they were protecting this guy. It was kind of, well, you know, here's a guy who's done well, everyone's out to get him. And we heard that over and over again from women outside his concerts and outside the courtroom.
Yeah, and I mean, that's pretty much in the black community. You know, you've listened to this man's music for 20-something years, and he's been a part of your family culture. Mm. So there was a sense of that.
It's almost like we know him, we don't know you.
Right. There's no way. It's still, you know, they look at the survivors and they say, oh, there's no way he would be with that person.
There is actually some beauty in this show, and the beauty is the dignity with which the young women who have been abused by R. Kelly, with which they speak, the dignity. The couple that really struck me, I mean, they all struck me, but the two that really got me, Alice and Angelo Clary, whose daughter, mm-hmm. Azriel, she's been sort of... I don't know what to say. Do I say prisoner? Yeah. She's been in the R. Kelly clan cult for 3 years, and they've not seen her for 3 years. And the dignity with which Alice and Angelo conduct themselves, as a dad, I can't even begin to imagine what that's like for them.
Yeah, and that's what Angelo has stated, even in the documentary and in his interviews. He has stated that he felt less of a man because... Here he is, this father who had a great relationship with his daughter, and this man could just come in and do this and destroy their family.
And that was another thing that was said outside the courtroom by the supporters, which was, you know, why are these girls being allowed to do that? Where are their parents? Actually, a lot of these people did have really loving families around them, and he still managed to manipulate them. And that was something that was really underlined by the documentary. I mean, Ian and I were watching Alice and Angelo go to the studio that part, in the final part. And I'm not going to spoil it, but it broke our hearts because we were rooting for them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, and they're still fighting for her today. But, you know, at the time, they're just like, this is our daughter's career. And what you don't see in the documentary is, you know, they told her, you can't be with this man while we're not around, and gave her certain rules. But of course, you know, she's a teenager, and she broke those rules.
I have to say, carry on, Tamara. Sorry, finish your point.
I was just going to say, he took advantage of that.
Yeah.
Listen, we don't want to give any spoilers. Again, is another strange word, but there are a few fist, you know, pumping the air moments, and without ruining it for people that are going to watch it, and we'll tell people where they can watch it again in a bit. But it's Michelle Kramer, isn't it, who goes to the hotel where she thinks her daughter Dominique is staying? Have I got that right? That's the right mum, isn't it?
Yes, Michelle Kramer.
What a legend.
Dominique's mum. Yeah, that's what she said. I had no idea people, you know, were going to respond to her the way that they have. But even while filming that, we didn't even know that was going to happen. I'm not trying to ruin it for anyone else.
No, exactly, but... and we're not going to ruin it, but we were watching that episode, literally on the... We both leaned forward on the edge of our seats, and, I mean, they're all everybody in there is a hero. All of the women, all of the parents are heroes. But man alive, when she got the gojones to go and do what she did... Oh, my God. And that's it, isn't it? These aren't girls. These aren't kids that have been abandoned by their parents. As Catherine said, these aren't, you know, girls on the fringes of society, vulnerable girls looking for love. These are kids who come from, you know, good households with parents that love them.
Yes, and, you know, whenever you're trying a certain age, you're going to want your freedom and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can see how, in the documentary, how Michelle was trying to allow her daughter to have that freedom, and then why that freedom, you know, she wished that she never did that. But at the same time, she's still thankful that, you know, she has a relationship with her daughter.
Yeah, there's no point in blaming the survivors. Actually, the person who's done wrong, it's quite obvious who's done wrong in this scenario.
I think this aired a couple of weeks ago in the States. It's about to start airing over here on the 5th of February. What has been the reaction, and what, if anything, has changed over there?
Well, here in the US, you can see that there's so much support that's coming from celebrities such as like Jada Pinkett Smith and rappers, and, you know, Celine Dion taking her music down and things like that. So it's been an overwhelming response in support of these women, and the women are just thankful because they didn't know how people were going to take this.
Wow.
You know, they didn't know if they were going to accept what they said or anything.
Very brave of them. You're right. You're very brave of them to come forward and to sit in that chair in front of the camera and share really intimate, personal details of abuse, knowing that there is a chance that there will be people watching going, well, this is rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
She's obviously making this up.
And one particular woman, Sparkle, has lost family, you know, contact with her family as a result of speaking out, but she continues to do so. And that just is testimony to the passion involved in this. And she just feels, I know that she particularly feels responsible. She could never have foreseen what happened there. I just think they're all remarkable women. And I noticed that, you know, there are people who still speaking out and saying, and R. Kelly, of course, is denying it all and suggesting that he's going to sue. But, you know, he said that sort of stuff before.
Tamara, has he sued you guys yet? Has R. Kelly sent you legal papers yet?
Well, we've received several different things from his attorney. So, and, of course, our legal team is looking and vetting all of those. But nothing to stand on at this moment.
Yeah. For him to go to prison for these crimes, does it now take? I don't understand the British system, let alone the American legal system. Does it take for one of these women to take him to court? Does that have to happen for to be a chance for him to go to prison?
I think there's several different possibilities for like crimes that have been committed, but the legal system pretty much is handling that.
I also want to raise the fact that Aaliyah's family are criticising the documentary and saying that it's lies and they're not going to stand by. Have you heard from them too?
I haven't personally heard from them either.
Tamara, how did you feel? I mean, cause here's the thing. You know, we make TV programmes, we make radio programmes, and then we like to, at the end of it, go, well, that was good, and we feel very, very proud. And you should feel proud of yourself because you've told an incredibly important story. But how do you feel about the series and about the impact and about the support that it's garnering? How do you feel about it, Tamara?
I think we all were kind of overwhelmed with the amount of, like, support that, you know, we've received from it. But I think at the same time we're happy for the survivors because it's allowing them to heal.
Yeah.
And so that there's like a sense of we're proud of ourselves to be able to convey such a story, but also happy for them because this allows them to be able to heal in places that they didn't even know that they were going to be able to.
It must be so important for them to feel believed and that they've spoken.
Yeah, they at first had some type of like
you know, they were like, what is this? How is this going to be perceived? Did I do the right thing? So they questioned themselves all the way up until, I think, the third is when it aired here in the U.S. And so they were just like, we don't know what people are going to say. So they were texting and calling me on the second, on the first, really nervous.
Yeah, I bet.
And
I
they
bet.
Were like, you know, they're calling me saying, am I going to be in this episode or when am I going to come up? Just tell me when I'm going to come. So they're very anxious.
Yeah.
They just want to kind of get it over with.
Tamara, listen, I wish you the best of luck. I think everybody, we've been talking about this show for the last couple of weeks, and I genuinely, this isn't, you know, me hyperbole or anything, I do think it's the most important TV show of the last 15 years at least. It's a really important story that I think exposes, you know, abuse of women, abuse of black women, abuse of power, fame, you know. And let's hopefully this scumbag, this pervert, this pedophile, this abuser will face justice of some kind, hopefully. Well done, Tamara. And we really appreciate you coming on and sharing your thoughts with us. It's a great program. So thank you.
The best of Ian Lee on Talk Radio.